Good evening and welcome to the Arroyo Grande City Council meeting for Tuesday, August 9th, 2016. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge is absent tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Here.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us for a moment of reflection. Thank you. This evening for the flag salute, our friends from the 805 Grizzly Bear Scout Troop are here. And can I ask them to please come up and lead us in the flag salute? And will the audience please stand for the flag salute? Thank you. Please be seated. And would you like to tell us about some of the things our scout group is involved in?
Sure. So we're the 805 Grizzly Bears. I'm the rover leader. So we follow the Baden-Powell's scouting guide, who actually wrote it in 1908. The Baden-Powell Service Association has been in this area for 10 years, but it started in England in 1960. Our Pathfinder leader here would like to say something else here, too, about what we've done. A little shy. So we've gone camping over in Parisa Plains on Soto Lake. And what did you learn over there?
How to camp and cook.
Okay. And Ari, this is one of our timber wolves. Who's also shy. What have you learned with us?
How to tie knots.
And first aid.
And first aid.
And we've gone on hikes, too. Well, we've been on hikes over on Oso Flaco Lake and Los Osos. So we're also an all-inclusive group. Obviously, we accept all girls and boys, too. We have our age ranges of, you know, anywhere from 2 years old upwards to past 18 years old. So we're all scouts here, too, all along. This is our chipmunk, our youngest member right here. You want to wave and say hi? And here's one of our honors. What else do you think about us? We have a bunch of fun, and we like to play a bunch of games. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It sounds like you've had some really good activities going. Okay, moving on to the agenda review, we have some closed session announcements from the last meeting, and I'll ask our city attorney to please make the report out of closed session.
Yes, at the July 26th meeting, the council met in closed session for a conference with their labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6, and the council provided direction to the city's agency representative with regard to the Arroyo Grande Police Officers Association's negotiations. The council also met in closed session for a public employee appointment for an interim city manager pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. And the council provided direction to the city's acting city manager regarding the appointment of an interim city manager.
Thank you very much. Can we move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Passes 4-0 with one absent. Tonight we have no special presentations, so that brings us to item number 7, which is community comments and suggestions. Any member of the public is welcome to address the council on any item that is not on the agenda this evening. For those items that are on the agenda this evening, we'll have an opportunity to comment on those before the council takes up those questions. So if anyone would like to address us on items, again, that are not on the agenda this evening, please come up at this time.
Hi, I'm Adrami Arroyo Grande, Great Gardens. I've presented to you in the past about the signage or lack thereof for Berry Gardens. I gave you packets of information. It was in the specific plans, and nothing's been done, and it was never rejected, and it should have gone through. And I'm begging you, I'm tired of telling people I live behind CVS Pharmacy or the low-income housing development. Every other development in Arroyo Grande and any other neighborhood in the city or the county has signage. Berry Gardens doesn't. And I think it's really important that we do, because it's an important neighborhood. And we're right next to Grover Beach, and I think it's nice to have some delineation there saying that we are a neighborhood and that we deserve to have a signage for our neighborhood. And it doesn't have to be as broad or as specific as a specific plan says, with the benches and all that pretty foliage, but some really nice signs which won't cost, break the bank. I think it's very important that we follow through on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the comment.
Good evening, Mayor Hill, Council members. God our Father, giver of life, we entrust the leaders of our city and those of our country to your loving care. You are the rock on which this nation was founded. You alone are the true source of our cherished rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Reclaim this land for your glory and dwell among your people. Send your spirit to touch the hearts of our city and our nation's leaders. Open their minds to the great worth of human life and the responsibilities that accompany human freedom. Remind your people that true happiness is rooted in seeking and doing your will. Every life matters, dear Lord. Protect our men and women serving in harm's way so that we might be safe. This we ask in your name. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Would anyone else like to address the council this evening? Surely.
Mr. Mayor and Council, Shirley Gibson Halcyon. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Who's Cow up the hill. My dad has a long history of that because he always loved the Who's Cow. And once I think he and some of his cousins got put in there for about an hour, I think they were rolling tires down Crown Hill. But he loved it. And then they used to do... my father and my mother did docent tours, and they would take all the little second graders up and tour the Who's Cow. So last year I went to an HRC meeting, which is a Historic Resources Committee meeting, and Mr. Public Works Jeff English was there. And he was discussing the Who's Cow and somehow putting some bars and gate so that the Who's Cow could be open for visitors, but to protect the walls from graffiti, et cetera. So at that point, the plan was to use some pre-made fencing from Home Depot. And I really thought that was kind of wimpy and not manly enough for the Who's Cow, because it's the walls are 8 inches thick, and you know it's a sturdy little building that's lasted 100 years. So, like any good committee member, I thought, well, I'll delegate, because that's what you do. So I delegated the job to my husband. When I told him, he was so happy he was speechless. He's really happy. Long story short, he got his good friend Paul Richardson to help. In the end, the project cost about $2,500. All materials and labor were donated, so there's no cost to the city. So I would like to recognize and honor Gillespie Steel Fabricating, and they happen to be on 4th Street in Guadalupe. It's kind of nice to have one of our city sisters donate to the village and its history. They provided a lot of labor and materials. And also thank Paul Richardson, and he did a lot of the labor and provided materials. And also to thank Tally Farms for the use of their facilities and their equipment. And also my husband. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Shirley. We appreciate that.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Paul Rinsler. I live in Arroyo Grande. I'm also a board member of Atheists United SLO, a local organization with over 475 members who live and work and vote in San Luis Obispo County and in Arroyo Grande. I'd like to briefly mention the birthday of a person from history because I think there's a valuable lesson in the story of this person. Today's the birthday of Amadeo Avogadro, an Italian chemist and physicist who in 1811 established what we call Avogadro's Law. And if you permit me a quick physics lesson, this law showed the connection between the volume, the temperature, the pressure, and the number of molecules in a gas. Avogadro also realized that atoms can combine with each other, and he's the one who gave us the term molecule. So the lesson is this. Avogadro's conclusions were not well received at first because they ran contrary to what many other people believed. But since his conclusions were based on actual observations and careful reasoning, it's Avogadro who is remembered in chemistry classes and not the others who disagreed with him. So we are all capable of making decisions or forming conclusions that are based on what we wish to be true. But I encourage all of you to follow Avogadro's example and base your decisions on what you can observe and what logically follows. Do this, and you too will be remembered for coming to the right conclusions. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time?
Good evening, council members. My name is James Wood. I'm an Arroyo Grande resident. I'm here today to share my thoughts on Camp Arroyo Grande. Like many people, I view this property as a one-of-a-kind resource that has so much to offer our community. As a young person, I remember being anxious to get to camp. I think about what I would bring, who I was going to bunk with, what fun adventures we'd have. On the bus ride there, we would gather together, pick our groups, strategize about which cabin we would get, and who would be our camp counselor. Then when we got there, the pure enjoyment set in. We experienced so much at camp than one could from just being at home. From letting our guards down while performing skits and singing by the campfire, to taking hikes, learning about community history, and trips to the beach. My camp was Camp Yeager in Cambria. It reminds me so much of this camp, from the cabins to the mess hall to the open space. Today, unfortunately, these kinds of opportunities seem to be disappearing. So-called progress becomes someone didn't have the foresight of preservation. I recently heard an interview with an elderly man who was planting a tree. Excuse me. The gentleman asked him why he was planting a tree since he would never live long enough for it to be of use to him. His response was, "Our forefathers planted for us, so we must plant for the next generation." I ask the council to do what they can to help preserve the camp for the next generation and to ensure that major shifts in its zoning do not occur. I thank you for your time and appreciate all your hard work for our community.
Thank you very much for the comment. Would anyone else like to address the council? Items not on the agenda, please come up.
Thank you, Mayor Hill and members of the council. I am Jeff Brubaker, transportation planner with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. We want to provide your council with an update on our region's transportation funding efforts. Since our last visit to your council, all seven cities and the County Board of Supervisors have approved the San Luis Obispo County Self-Help Local Transportation Investment Plan. SLOCOG followed by adopting the plan and ordinance. And on July 19th, the County Board of Supervisors voted to place it on the November ballot for voter consideration as Measure J. To refresh your memories, Measure J is a 9-year, 0.5% sales tax increase for transportation-only investments, with safeguards to ensure citizen oversight and protection so that the state cannot take the funds. If approved by 2/3 of the voters, Measure J would raise an estimated $25 million per year, with over half coming from non-residents. Revenues from this sales tax include funding for local road maintenance, highway and interchange projects, senior mobility enhancements, and bike, pedestrian, safe routes to school projects, and accessibility projects for persons with disabilities. Additionally, with 55% of the funds as local control, this city would receive an estimated $8.5 million in addition to project funding from other categories. The key local projects for Arroyo Grande include street maintenance and repair, congestion relief and operational improvements, East Branch, East Grand area, Halcyon corridor improvements, operational and bike ped safety improvements at East Branch, Crown Hill, and Huasna. Clubs, organizations, or individuals can request information, presentation, and get their questions answered. So for more information, please visit selfhelpslow.org. That's all one word, selfhelpslow.org, or call SLOCOG to schedule a presentation. Also, I have some brochures if anybody is interested. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for the information.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Teresa Schultz, and I am a 30-year homeowner and resident of the city of Arroyo Grande. Located in the hills above the village of Arroyo Grande are 29 hidden acres just up the street from the Bank of America. And if you didn't know better, you would think you were way out in the country. If you haven't been up to Camp Arroyo Grande, I suggest you take a trip up there and experience the camp. It's quite amazing. Recently, the Methodist Conference has put this property up for sale, and this is a historic 120-year-old jewel of the city, and it's a treasure to our community, and it needs to be preserved. I had the fortune of being a camp counselor up there with both my children attending Camp Fires, Camp Taconico for many, many years. And having lived in the city for many years, I had no idea Camp Arroyo Grande existed. This facility can accommodate 100-plus people with sleeping lodges and 5 cabins. It has a dining hall, commercial kitchen, a swimming pool, several fire circles, picnic areas, and lots of area to roam around in its rustic park setting, and a beautiful cross up on top of the hill with a picturesque view of the city and the valley. A member of the public already addressed the issue of memories that this camp has created over the years. For 50 years, Camp Fire has held Camp Taconico for 1 week in the summer, and it's been an amazing experience for many, 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 many children throughout the South County as well as other areas within San Luis Obispo County. This should be a destination camp, and I request that the council do everything in their power to assure that the camp is not rezoned for housing development, and that every step be taken to preserve the legacy and the beauty of this jewel of the Central Coast. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? Please come up.
Hi. Good evening. My name is Amy, and I would like to talk to you also about the Camp Arroyo Grande. Sorry, I'm going to read from my phone because it's from an email. Camp Taconico has a very special place in my heart, not only to myself, but both of my parents have been very involved in that camp, and now my own children are able to go. So for me in particular, three generations have been able to experience this camp, and it is something that we look forward to every single summer. Camp Taconico has a special place in many people's hearts in Arroyo Grande. Boys and girls around our community have enjoyed a week of crafts, singing, archery, swimming, and friendship for over 50 years now. And it's the kind of place that people return to year after year. One of the best things about Camp Taconico is that it teaches children of all types to be confident leaders by learning outdoor skills and many 21st century qualities such as critical thinking and collaboration. Children across our community learn about themselves and how to be friends with others. And they carry those lessons into schools, churches, sports, and all other areas of their lives. Many leaders across our community spend time learning and growing at Camp Taconico, and now we send our own children for those same lessons. The Camp Arroyo Grande property is a hidden gem in our area, and with the help of organizations like Campfire, we can utilize this special property even more. On behalf of my family and the Bruffs and the Dixon family who are not able to be here, I strongly encourage you to take special steps to protect this property for generations of children to come. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council this evening on items that are not on the agenda? Okay, hearing none at this time, we'll close public comment. And can we... I have had a number of people from Berry Gardens ask about the sign issue. Can we perhaps follow up on that? Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
I noted that, and we will follow up.
Mr. Mayor, if I might as well. I've got a number of letters from people that want to write about the camp. Is there a way to forward those letters to the camp, or is there a public address that they could write to directly to let the camp know of the value of the camp?
We have had contact with representatives of the Methodist Church, and we can forward that information to them, absolutely. So if anybody, if you have information that we don't have, please get it to me and we'll make sure that that gets forwarded.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other? Brings us to item number 8, the Acting City Manager Report. City Manager English.
Mayor, members of council, actually I need to start my announcements tonight with a sad note. We have been informed by our current city engineer, Matt Horn, that he has taken a new position with the city of San Luis Obispo, and his last day will be this Friday. We've done our best, had mounted a valiant effort to try to keep Mr. Horn in employment with the city, yet he has determined that his family's best interests are in San Luis Obispo. So we're sad to see him leave. I did want to acknowledge that Matt has been a tremendous employee for the city. His level of expertise, his technical knowledge are almost off the charts. He's very good. His technical writing skills are tremendous. And our engineering division has kind of increased its level of service tremendously. And some of those will be lasting impacts. And so I wanted to pass that along to you tonight and congratulate Matt on his appointment. He will be the city engineer for the city of San Luis Obispo, a highly prestigious position. So we're very happy for him. Sad for us, but happy for San Luis. I did want to say that we are in the process of securing city engineer services, and we'll have that in place before Mr. Horn leaves. So wanted to pass that along this evening. Also wanted to just let the members of the public know and the members of the council know that this Thursday night in this building at 6 o'clock p.m., there will be a Strawberry Festival workshop. There was some discussion in advance of and following the Strawberry Festival this year about some potential changes to the Strawberry Festival and some community concerns, and so there will be an opportunity to address those here at 6 o'clock in the evening this Thursday night, and public's encouraged and welcome to attend. Did want to pass along that the Five Cities Fire still does have employees up at the Sobranos Fire, which is the Carmel Fire, and I'll read a quick note I received from the fire chief today I wanted to pass along. Five Cities Fire supported an EOS, an OES request, and sent a crew of four aboard OES 386 to the Sobranos Fire. The crew performed structure protection, backfiring operations, and served as a communication repeater station between their assigned division and the command staff. Engineer Joey Silva was dispatched in his role as the dozer boss. Engineer Silva has received specialized training and certification in his role for overseeing a group of private contracted bulldozers, masticators, and a water tender. His group has been doing post-burn rehabilitation, which includes rough grading to contain future runoff, and has been gone for over a week, and he may be gone for up to 14 days. So one of the members of Five Cities crew is off taking care of that fire. So our thoughts and prayers are with him. Wanted to announce that this Friday, August 12th, if you are so inclined, there is an opportunity for volunteers to come and help maintain the James Way Habitat trails. We have some trails in that area, and our volunteer coordinator Sheridan has organized a volunteer effort this Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning. We will be meeting at the trailhead right along James Way, and so bring sturdy boots and some long pants and long sleeves. There's poison oak in the area, but we encourage you to come and help. Look forward to that. I will be there myself. Also wanted to pass along just some committee updates. The Planning Commission, Traffic Commission, Historical Resources Committee, Downtown Parking Advisory Committee all have not met since we had our last council meeting. The Architectural Review Committee did meet on August 1st. It was a consideration of the East Cherry Avenue specific plan. Their action was to recommend approval of design guidelines for sub-area 2. With consideration for two-story residents adjacent to the East Cherry Avenue, and a recommendation for sub-area 1 hotel to be continued to allow modifications to the sub-area guidelines, and finally to recommend approval of sub-area 3, the Japanese Welfare Association CUP, with final design for senior living structure to return to the ARC prior to application for a building permit. Also, the Staff Advisory Committee met and developed conditions of approval for a project at the corner of Grace Lane and Rodeo Drive and identified some information necessary for the adequate environmental review. And with that concludes the Acting City Manager report. I will not be in this position as of the next meeting, hopefully, if there is a action tonight taken in that regard. So thank you very much for your trust in me.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. Oh, a well-deserved round of applause. And I want to personally thank you, and I know all the council, including Councilmember Barnett, who can't be here tonight, is very grateful for your outstanding service to the city. We deeply appreciate it. Moving on, item 9 is the consent agenda. Any council member like to have items individually considered?
I have two.
Mayor Pro Tem.
I'd like to pull item 9F and 9H.
Okay. Any others?
I don't have it. Oh, sorry. Hold on.
Yeah, it disappeared. As I think it may be the same one, but I wish it had it in advance. Actually, I'd like to pull 9B just for quick clarification.
Any others? Would any of the members of the public like to address the council on the consent agenda items? This could be any of the consent agenda items 9A through 9I.
Patty Welsh, Rio Grande. I'd like to speak on 9H. It appears there have been 14 permits issued for Airbnb-type businesses, and they brought in $19,450. The city is aware of 40 more that are operating without permits. How is that fair to the 14 residents who have filed their permits and are running their businesses legally within the city? How much more money would they bring into the city that we need the revenue? I've heard council members state that all businesses should be treated equally, so I just want to say here is an opportunity to make sure that all businesses comply with our city permits equally also. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address any of the consent agenda items? Items 9A through 9I. Okay, hearing none at this time, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda and ask for a motion for approving items 9A through 9I with the exception of 9B, 9F, and 9H.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda items 9A through 9I with the exception at this time of 9B, 9F, and 9H. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Barn, or excuse me, Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Moving on then individually, item 9B, Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, I did. Well, actually, I think you guys are lined up for something else.
Yeah, we are lined up for something else. Administrative Services Director Debbie Malicutt would answer the questions regarding that. If we want to go ahead and address H first, then she can come afterwards.
We'll entertain item 9H then.
All right. I appreciate Ms. Welsh's comments. That's one of the reasons I had 9H regarding the status report of our vacation rental and home stays. I, too, was concerned about the potential of 40 non-permitted residences. And I guess my question then to Director McClish and Mr. Downey would be there's 40 non-permitted residences, and I understand that when this was first moving forward, there was letters of notification related to the new process and the ordinance and what needed to be done. So I would like to know your take on the possibility of perhaps using a volunteer in our volunteer pool to not only research to assure that we have the correct property owners' addresses and perhaps re-notify. Maybe it's just a simple lack of awareness if they live out of the area or they're not aware of what our requirements are. I think without doing that, we are missing a potential, maybe a small source of revenue, but we don't ever want to turn away a potential opportunity for revenue. So I just wanted to ask your take on making it more fair for those 14 owners that stepped up and have been in compliance and actually contributed almost $20,000 to, you know, to our funding sources. So,
yes, certainly, and thank you for the question. I think this is a great opportunity to these status report updates to take a look at where we are and give us the opportunity to take a quick look to see how many unpermitted vacation rentals and home stays there may be out there. And in answer to your question, I think volunteers could be used for this. We just need the additional research and the ability to gain the correct addresses and to put out another notification without too much of an impact to our other enforcement initiatives. So I think that can certainly be done with the police volunteers. I did have a conversation with the police chief on that. And when we rolled out the ordinance, we did a wider notification. We had public workshops, and we notified, in addition to notifying folks out there. So it truly may be a matter, at least for some, of just not understanding the city rules.
Okay, and then, you know, I'm glad you brought up the balancing. You know, we're so cognizant of, you know, the priorities and goals that we've just set that I wanted to really be careful that this wouldn't be, you know, shift or skew the track that we're on. And I also know that the volunteer coordinator, if Chief Annavali's resources need to be shifted for a different priority. Maybe there's, I don't know, a former ESCO officer or title officer or a real estate person that has the ability to do the search and get those letters out. So thank you for that. That was really my comment, Mr. Mayor, and I'd be ready to receive and file.
Could I just ask one question as well? So in the staff report, you mentioned that there are services that provide this as well. And I wanted just to get an idea on what the cost of that might be, given the amount of money that seems like might be out there.
Yeah, and of course you asked the question that I don't have an answer to. There have been, as this use has become more and more popular and more widespread and a much farther range in diversity of the different websites that offer this service of advertising, so too have the services that will do this research for you. And it's when we did the original enforcement, the identifying which ones are operating without a permit and really drilling down into the which residence it actually is, because they don't make this location publicly accessible. They don't print, here's the actual address. So they do most times post pictures, but you do have to do a lot of that research, and that's what takes a lot of time. So these monitoring companies, although they don't publish their rates, they are out there and they're starting to pop up more and more. Well, they will actually actively monitor your community and do that investigative work. But unfortunately, I don't have a cost estimate on that at this time.
I was going to suggest that it might be something we want to look at down the road, because it is complicated. I actually don't think it's quite as simple as just jumping on as an escrow officer. It's going to take some sort of back research in order to discover this. And there's a part of me that, why would we reinvent the wheel if somebody's already got this down to a science? So that's just my comment.
So this is a receive and file item, so we'll...
Well, don't we have to vote on it as a consent agenda item?
Is that... Do we need to vote to receive and file?
It is on the consent agenda, so we should have a vote to accept, to receive and file.
It could be a voice vote. A voice vote.
Yeah, so I'll move approval of 8H.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes 4-0 with one absent. Moving then to, let's take item 9F. Director Melikut's here. I'm sorry, 9B. 9B.
Yeah, I guess the first question relates to the appendum you sent us, and I think I just answered my own question. But I was looking for the change, which had to do with detective pay to be in specialty pay.
Mm-hmm.
And
correct. It was incorporated into the supplemental that we sent you in a revised MOU that came out yesterday.
I did look through specialty pay, but I didn't see it there, although now that I look back at the actual directions, I see that it's
in a separate section.
Okay.
Yes.
And then I had an additional question about specialty pay that you didn't get back to me in an email with. Were you able to determine what total cost for specialty pay is?
Unfortunately, I didn't have time to get that research, but I will get that for you and provide that information to the council. The question was about the amount of annual cost that's involved in paying the specialty pays.
I had a couple of other questions that were just technical that I'll follow up with. I do have a couple of comments as well that I'd like to make. So first I want to make, it's clear in the staff report, but for people, many people don't read the whole staff report, that while this is a 6% raise, a sizable raise for the police department, that because there's actually a co-contribution of 2% to their retirement fund, that the net to the city is a 4%. So it's still a sizable raise, but I do think that that's something that's not always made clear when we look at this at these things, particularly when they're in the consent agenda. The second point that I wanted to make here was that this is a one-year deal. We're looking at this based on the fact that we have a comp study coming forward in the future that will explore a lot of things like the retirement program compared to other cities, our medical program, so that we can look at this in a much more comprehensive way to be sure that, in fact, that we're competitive and that we will be able to hire
police in the future. So those are just two particular points that I did want to make sure were clear to the public.
I just had a procedural question. Is that an amendment from what was in the agenda? Or, so do we have to approve it as amended, or can we just approve it as is?
Let's see. The action, the recommendation is to adopt a resolution approving a memorandum of understanding. You can say the memorandum of understanding attached to the supplemental for clarity's sake.
So moved.
Second.
Any other comment or discussion?
Thank you, Heather.
No, Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt a resolution approving a memorandum of understanding with the Arroyo Grande Police Officers Association as attached to the supplemental information for fiscal year 2016-17. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. That passes 4-0 with one absent. And then moving to item 9F, Acting Manager English.
Do you want me to?
Barbara, do you have a question? Yes, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. On this one, one question and then one clarification. Related to actual verbiage on one of the goals. This question has to do with, initially it was my understanding that the CJPIA, which is the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority, would actually reimburse the city for the cost of the facilitator service, and I just wanted to double check what the status of that was and if that indeed holds true for that $5,000.
That indeed does hold true. The CJPIA has indicated their willingness to pay for that service for us. I was not able to get in touch with anyone to find out the actual status of cutting the check. We have paid the facilitator ourselves, and they will reimburse us, but I would expect that within the next couple of weeks we'll be getting that reimbursement.
Okay, very good. And then the other, this is just more of a housekeeping. It has to do on page 3. It's under the goal, maintain cost-effective fire service. It seems like all the other goals start with complete. This one actually says finish, and I would just ask for consistency that we delete the word finish, insert the word complete to make it consistent with the other goals, and it would just read complete fire service, five cities fire authority strategic study, etc. And that would be my request. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Any comment?
No additional comment.
Okay. Then I would like to go ahead and move to approve the City Council's goals prepared for fiscal year 2016-2017.
Second.
And that would be with the revision?
Corrections, yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the Council goals for 2016-17 with the change to the word complete as mentioned. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes, that also passes 4-0 with one absent.
Mayor Hill, just one point of comment. It was staff's intent to print those and actually post them here in the council chambers and to post your goals on the website as quickly as we can post those. So we want to make sure you know we will be communicating those to the community starting tomorrow.
Very good.
Thank you very much. Moving on to item 10, public hearings, and I will request the city clerk to please announce item 10A.
Item 10A is consideration of staff project 16-005, a public art sculpture entitled Rehearsal. Location is 495 Fair Oaks Avenue. The applicant is the Clark Center Foundation for the Performing Arts, and the representative is Kyle Harris.
Director McLeish.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight we have our seventh public art project for your consideration. And with that, Planning Manager Downing will give the report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening again, members of the council. This is staff project 16-005. It is the art piece entitled Rehearsal. And it is, again, located at the Clark Center for the Performing Arts. So we'll start with some background on the public art program. So in 2002, the City Council approved a public art program and process for all future public art pieces and applications to go through. And in 2006, the City Council approved a public art donation program as well. And most recently, in October of 2011, the City Council amended the guidelines regarding art on public property. And then in January of 2013, the Arroyo Grande Public Art Committee was formed. And I'm sorry, I misquoted Director McClish. The proposed sculpture is actually the sixth art piece. I misquoted that. That was my mistake. But it's the sixth art piece and believe the fourth most recently within the last year to be proposed. So we have seen an uptick in the last year of the proposals. So this is the sculpture itself. And as you can see, it will be a bronze sculpture. The sculpture itself is about 9 feet tall. It's eight feet, 8 inches. It does depict two dancers rehearsing their performance. And it will be, in totality, a total of about 13 feet or so tall. So the 8 foot, 8 inch sculpture will sit atop a 4 foot CMU, split face CMU block pedestal, which does match the actual Clark Center building itself. And the pedestal will have a polished concrete cap on top to give it some more intricate detail than just the CMU block. Underneath the sculpture, they are proposing four uplit light fixtures to actually illuminate the piece during the nighttime. And so here is the sculpture actually sitting on top of that that 4 foot pedestal. So obviously there is no scale, but that is what it would appear to look like. So I did mention that the art piece is proposed at the Clark Center for the Performing Arts. This image with the red circle does depict where the art piece will actually go. And you might recall one of the most recent art pieces was actually the Arbor sculpture. And just to give you some context, that piece is proposed down here to be located down here in front of the administration building, while this piece is proposed right back behind this kind of half moon curve right in front of the entrance to the Performing Arts Center. And it will stick up above this half moon curve, so the passing motorists and those attending the Clark Center will actually be able to see it. Now, in terms of the process for public art and the process tonight, the public art panel, in accordance with the guidelines, is the approval authority for the project. However, in the guidelines, it does say that the City Council must provide a public hearing for the purpose of obtaining community input. So after tonight's public hearing, we'll move it on to the public art panel. And that panel consists of two representatives of the property owner, two representatives from the County Arts Council, one member of the ARC, one member of either the Chamber or the Village Improvement Association, and then one member of the South County Historical Society. And staff anticipates that meeting would be set up with it for the next few weeks. Now, with regard to criteria for approving public art, we have several bullets. I won't bore you with reading all of those off the slide, but they are in your staff report as well. And so that concludes staff's presentation tonight. It is recommended that the City Council does receive public comment and provide input on the proposed art sculpture, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
First, are there any questions for staff of Council? Councilmember Brad.
I don't know if these are questions for you or the applicant, but the first question is the sculpture going to have kind of a patina to it as it ages?
Being made of bronze, it would have somewhat of a patina. I don't know if it's being, at this time, I don't know if it's being treated to limit that patina to a certain hue or to a certain extent. I would imagine the applicant's representative could address that comment.
And then just secondly and lastly, is the material such that if there's graffiti of any kind, that it can be cleaned easily? are taken care of easily?
That is something that the arts panel has brought up for several different other public art proposals. So it's something that I would imagine they would recommend doing as well, but I would also rely on the applicant's representative to address that.
Mr. Mayor, those are my questions.
I have none either. So at this time, we would open the floor to public comment on this item. Would anyone like to comment on this item? Please.
Linda Drum again. Quick comment. Just wondering, is this going to cost the public? Who's paying for this is what I'd like to know. Is that coming out of our tax base here in the city, or is that coming from the Performing Arts Center? Who's paying for the sculpture? That's it?
I think we'll have, we have a representative who can answer the question. Thank you for the question.
Hi, I'm Kyle Harris from Harris Architecture, representing Lucie Marsh School District. To answer your question, is completely donated free of charge. It's not being funded by the city whatsoever. The school district is taking care of the actual pedestal, and the artwork itself is being donated by the artist. And so, to your question, Mr. Brown, it does have a coating on it, so it will not patina, because there's, it's kind of hard to see in this picture, but there are three or four different textures of bronze there. That coating will also help with the graffiti if we happen to have any of those issues.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to comment on this item, offer suggestions? Yeah, welcome.
Good evening. I'm Nan Fowler, and I'm actually president of the Clark Center. And I have a letter that we have written to Lucia Marr that we are totally in support of the acceptance of this sculpture. It's going to be beautiful. The foundation, the Clark Center, the association, and the school board have each donated toward the installation of it, and we're just hoping that it just goes through. It's just gorgeous. I do have pictures, more pictures, and I have sketches of where it's going to go and everything, so if anybody has any more questions. Actually, interestingly, I have a picture of the one of how it's going to look. It's a mock-up of how it's going to look when it actually is placed there, and it's going to be a real addition, so I am hoping that we'll get through this process. We have it close to coming now, so let's get it over with. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there any other comment? Any other comment? Okay, hearing none at this time, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the council for any input. Councilmember Guthrie?
I think this will be a great addition to the Clark Center, and look forward to it getting through the process and seeing it in place. Thank you.
And I as well.
Mayor Pro Tem?
I'd also like to commend the benefactors, Don and Terry Ernst. Without their generosity, this sculpture would not be moving forward. There would not be the funds to commission now. I think it's Scruggs, is the artist from Paso Robles. Something like this, as we all know through our planning background, public art is a real critical key to cities and the attraction. They draw people to our cities. They're focal points. People want to come and see them. I think it will really jazz up, for lack of a better term, the Clark Center, and it will really kind of distinguish it as a place for the performing arts. I think it's really great that we're moving on and moving forward with another piece of artwork for the city. And again, with the collaboration of everybody, it's pretty remarkable. So I would totally support moving forward. Get it to that panel. Make it happen.
And I obviously would agree. So thank you, Ms. Fowler, for the good work there at the Clark Center, and look forward to moving the thing through the process and being able to view it. So, completes item 10A. And I would ask the city clerk to please announce item 10B.
Item 10B is consideration of temporary water and wastewater rates for fiscal year 2016-17 through fiscal year 2018-19.
Thank you. Director Malicote or City Manager English, would you like to comment first?
I would, please. Thank you. And as many of our reports are to the council, this is a group effort, and a large part of the work on this project has been done, or this report has been done, by the Administrative Services Director, Debbie Malicote. However, in the audience tonight, Shane Taylor, our Utilities Manager, will also be presenting with us. Tonight is a discussion of temporary water and wastewater rates. It's essentially a drought rate, and we have a presentation for you tonight. Let's start with Administrative Services Director Debbie Malicote.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and members of the Council. Just a quick review from where we've been. On May 10th, you received a comprehensive look at the city's water situation, including a discussion about supply, where we are with the Lopez Lake levels, and also a financial outlook for both the water and sewer fund. At that time, you directed staff to schedule a public hearing to consider temporary rate increases in compliance with Proposition 218. We sent out those notices. The proposed rate increases would be an 11% increase for the water and a 10% increase for wastewater, and the public hearing is tonight, as scheduled on August 9th. Quickly, you've seen these slides before from the May 10th hearing, but just as a reminder, conservation efforts have been successful in our community. Who would have guessed when we were here about 18 months ago and talking about a five-year plan of how we were going to get 2% a year out of the community, that we would end up far surpassing that that goal that was the original state goal of reducing our consumption by the year 2020. So consumption has been occurring and at a pace far exceeding even the governor's 28% mandate for our community. As a reminder, the rate study that we did was a five-year rate study. It maintained our water fund reserves at about $6 million a year. And based on current consumption levels, we project that we would now have a shortfall of about $3.2 million if we didn't make any changes. Quickly looking at the numbers for the water fund, you can see that over the next 3 years, again, without any changes to drought rates, our revenues would be about $6 million a year. Expenditures are $7.5 million a year. With the rates as proposed, the rates and the expenditure reductions as proposed, we do end up in a much better circumstance, but we are definitely drawing down on our fund reserves. One of the reasons why it's difficult to make changes on the expenditure side for the water and sewer fund is there are a lot of fixed costs. These are costs that don't change regardless of whether we deliver 1 gallon of water or 1 million gallons of water. There are certain costs that do change, like the amount of chemicals that we would use, but there are a lot of costs that don't change regardless of how much water is delivered. So if we were looking to solve this problem purely on the expenditure side, an 11% rate increase would be about $650,000 a year. So you can see that basically means the elimination of the entire staff in the water fund. Or it means the elimination. We could have staff, but they would have no operating and maintenance expenses to go along with them. They would have no ability to do anything because they wouldn't have any materials or tools to do their job. It would mean we would eliminate essentially our entire capital improvement program, which is about $650,000 a year. There are large fixed costs associated with getting our water from Lopez. Regardless of how much water we take from Lopez, we have to pay about $3.4 million a year.
Likewise, there's about $1.7 million of other fixed costs that have to come out of the water fund. So to solve the problem entirely on the expenditure side is pretty tricky. And one of the things that we wanted to provide you with a little bit more information about is, you know, what is involved in the cost of providing water for the community, and a little bit of information about the fixed portion of those costs.
Mayor, members of council, I want to talk first about one of the fixed costs, and this is somewhat counterintuitive. Here, the customers are reducing their consumption, yet we are raising rates. And so that's been a challenge for some of the folks who have contacted the city and have submitted protest letters in this regard. So I wanted to really reiterate the discussion that Director Malicote had about fixed costs. There are a number of fixed costs in our system that, regardless of the quantity that we deliver to our customer, are fixed and we have limited control over. One of them is the Lopez Reservoir and the associated debt from the Lopez Reservoir. That is our primary water system. This is a picture on the screen, the previous one of when it was actually full of water. I had that one. I wish it looked like that today. And the picture below is actually the construction in the 60s. So the dam was constructed in 1968. Actually, it was filled in 1 year. It was kind of a miracle 1969 flood event. So there is hope that we could fill it again. But that associated, all the costs associated with that facility are being paid for by the customers, and we pay a rate that's a fixed fee whether we take any water or not. The county still has to maintain and pay for that facility, and so that is to the tune of approximately $3.4 million a year, a significant chunk of our expenditures. And then the second part of an additional part of our expenditures would be the operational expenses. We do have a water and sewer crew. It is a lean-sized crew. We are not large staff by any stretch of the imagination, and they do a tremendous job. They do quite a bit. In the picture on the screen, we actually did a capital improvement project ourselves. They were running waterline, I believe, on Gallardi at that point. And so our crew does a tremendous variety of functions in order to maintain the system. And I'm going to have our utility supervisor come up and tell you about that in a moment. And there's, if you go on to the next slide, there's a variety of things in the system. That I just have a picture here of a fire hydrant that got knocked over. And we maintain the fire hydrants. That's Tim Schmidt on the screen, who went and turned off that water valve that provides the source for that fire hydrant. So we have to have a crew that maintains our system, and that crew does a wide variety of functions, and Shane Taylor will describe those functions to us now. The next slide actually has those on some of them on the screen. You can just go through.
Okay, so how are you doing, you guys? You're doing good?
Yes, sir.
Good. Yeah, so we talk about daily operation, and it takes a lot going on every day in our system, not only for the water and the sewer. And the $3.4 million, a lot of that is to the county workers that run the plant, take care of the dam. They're out there every day. They're running the treatment plant, taking care of the chemical feed systems, the mixing systems, the filters. I got a call at 5 o'clock today at home that they're having problems at the plant. And they called me and said they may have to shut the plant down tonight because they've got a filtration pump failing. and they wanted to know what we could do. That's just a daily thing. That we don't like that to happen, but that means we have to, us being the biggest customer, have to react. Because if they got to cut flows, they got to come to Arroyo Grande because we take the most water. That's a something that happens, something that usually happens every day in the operation of a water system and a sewer system. But they also take care of the pipeline, not only from the plant, the pipeline that goes all the way out to Port San Luis, all the turnouts to all the cities and other districts, sampling. And that's just the county side. Then our daily operations, like today, we're had a crew out on Halcyon. We're relocating a connection out on Sandalwood and Halcyon of an old 4-inch pipe that was put in the 50s. We eliminated it and tied the street onto the main on Halcyon. We're replacing pumps and motors, maintaining them, greasing them, cleaning. I had my summer interns we hire today. They're out at our Vista Del Mar pump station helping clean that building, because we get visited annually by about, it seems like, 5,000 or 6,000 swallows, and they decide to nest up under this building, and they're beautiful, and but they make a big mess. That's something that we have to keep. We got a lot of buildings we got to take care of every day. All our meter systems, we're reading meters daily for customers turning off water, turning on water, moving in, moving out. Numerous requests, especially during the drought, audits, helping find leaks. And then just the daily stuff, like first thing in the morning, I'll look and see where our tank levels are at, what our chlorine residuals are reading, what our pressure readings, recording all that data and keeping track of the operation on a daily and actually hourly basis in some cases. So a lot going on just to keep it running. The thing I tell people is this job is not, you just can't leave it. It has to run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It never cannot run. It never stops, ever, ever, ever. And if something goes wrong, you've got to fix it now. You just can't walk away and say, oh, I'll get it tomorrow. I'd like to do that sometimes, but I can't. So that's a kind of a quick overview of what we do daily. That, unfortunately, like Jeff said and Debbie is, we are delivering less water than we ever anticipated when we did the rate study. And our customers have been fantastic. I just did the report to the state. In July, we cut back another 35% from 2013. We're right on that 35-36% cutback. But that also equates to lost dollars to our fund, which the reserves were really designed to take this. Hopefully, it will rain. We'll get some rebound back, but ultimately, the conservation, this temporary conservation rate, will get us through until it rains, and then we'll have another rate study to figure out where we really are at when things return somewhat to normal.
And thank you, members of council. The intent was to describe those ongoing operational costs that, regardless of the amount of water that we deliver, we still have to have a full-size crew in order to manage that system. The system size doesn't change. The components of the system don't change. And the maintenance requirements don't change regardless of the amount of water that we deliver. And so it is challenging to reduce the expenditures on the operational side. Efficiency is critical. We operate an efficient program, and we constantly look for efficiencies. Our crew size is lean, and they do a variety of functions. So that is a challenge to reduce all of the expenditures or cover the reductions in our revenue through expenditure reduction. So with that, we'll turn that over to Debbie Malakut for the rest of the presentation.
No questions. Thank you.
Can we ask a couple questions for Shane?
So I think it might be interesting to sort of flip this around, and why don't you tell us what kind of expenses are actually marginal, you know, that change, that are based on use?
Based on use, power. Okay. Probably we've saved on our power. Definitely we were way under budget on our electrical power bill last year. I think we budgeted like over $100,000 for pumping, and we didn't come close to that. On both the sewer side and the water side, so we save on power. We save on fuel. What else? Chemicals. We're not treating as much water. Last year we didn't pump hardly any well water at all, so we're well under budget on our chemical. And fortunately, in the enterprise funds, that returns back to the water fund balance if we didn't spend it. Other marginal, if you're using less power and energy, you're not taxing your pumps and motors as much. So we've had less breakdowns because they're running less. Less reagents. So the production side of things, you know, chemical costs, power costs, sampling costs, sending stuff to the lab because we're not pumping, therefore we don't have to sample.
You don't sample based on a time basis? You do that on...
We do on some things, but some things are based on use. Okay. You know, if you're not running the well, you don't have to sample it. So.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, there's the whole trade-out between using Lopez water and well water, but we're... actually going to switch over to well water. So.
We have been. We're pumping more well water, but it was still well below what we did just a few years ago. But it does translate into less cost on that end of things, power, chemicals, and sampling, and that end of it. As far as, but everything else is the same. It's still got to go through the pipes. It's got to go through the meters. It's got to go into the tanks. That doesn't change.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other questions? I think I'll hold my questions off for Jen.
Okay, thank you, Shane.
You're welcome.
So that's a little bit about the operating side. There is also another cost component, which are capital projects. These are our larger projects, things like water line replacements, reservoirs, building reservoirs, rehabilitating reservoirs. You can see on the screen the capital projects that are scheduled for the water fund over the next several years. The one that's up there, the first reservoir 3 and 4 coating and seismic, that is the one that we presented to you back in May, on May 10th, and suggested that that could be deferred for some period of time. It won't be able to be deferred forever, but we could defer it for now. And probably through this drought. But should the council want to make a trade-off about the amount of rate increase, this would be a place to look at scheduled capital projects that are out there. Again, there's a risk to doing that. A lot of these things are, if you don't maintain them, you're going to pay more to replace them later. So, you know, there's some things here that are not recommended for deferral or elimination, and Mr. English is going to talk a little bit more about that.
Certainly, and on your screen, the LaPointe, there's some limited opportunities here because of some of the projects that we already have under construction. The project at top, we already have calculated into the cost that would be deferred and not done until after the drought rate sunsets. The LaPointe area main upgrade is already under construction. That was significantly older pipe segments in that area that are being replaced now. The Reservoir 5 recoding project, a portion of that has already been done. The second portion of that project, we actually, that $277,000 could be moved out beyond the three-year rate. As Dr. Malakot mentioned, these are projects that could be temporarily deferred. However, at some point, we do need to maintain our system and our equipment and our infrastructure. So the longer we go, it's like a road. The longer you go before paving it, the more money you're going to have to put into rehabilitating it. And so not always the best strategy is to put things off that should be done. However, that project could be put off. It's scheduled for 18-19. It could be put off two more years. The Reservoir 7 project, that actually is a project that we would not recommend delaying on. A large portion of that project is actually funded through the Water Facilities and Water Availability Fund, and that is a pressure project that we're actually already utilizing. We've gone beyond our limit on the existing system, and we need to add a new reservoir. And so we would not recommend that project be delayed. Again, since a majority of it is being paid out of other funds, that $280,000 only represents a portion of the project. I think it's close to a $1 million project. So that would be leveraged. The other project, the Coach Road and Garden Street pipe bridges evaluation, we would recommend that stay in. That would be an evaluation project to determine the status of those facilities. So we would recommend that be retained. And then also we would recommend the retention of the Highway 101 crossing. I'm not as familiar with that project. I'd have to ask utility manager Shane Taylor about it. But there is some opportunity there. The $277,000 could be deferred if the council chooses. We did put in the report already to recommend deferring the Reservoir 3 and 4 coating project.
So the proposed approach to solving the water fund financial gap is, again, implementing a rate increase that would generate about $1.7 million, deferring that Reservoir 3 and 4 project. That actually was a project that was scheduled last fiscal year, so technically we didn't do it. We didn't spend it. The money's in fund balance. So it's kind of a drawdown of fund balance, but it's because we're deferring that capital project. Eliminating this would end up not being the $600,000 that was proposed for the Water Neutralization Fund, which pays for water conservation programs such as Cash for Grass and some of our other rebate programs. The council directed that rather than a 10% rate increase, we should do an 11% rate increase and use that additional 1% to generate about $150,000, restoring some ability to do some conservation programs. And then we, of course, would be drawing down on the reserves. So that's how we're proposing to close the $3.2 million gap for the water fund. And again, you've seen this slide. This is what the fund balance would look like. If we didn't make any change, the blue color there on the screen shows you that our fund balance would be drawn down rather quickly. And by 2016-17, we're right at our minimum fund balance. That's our policy minimum fund balance. And by 2018-19, we're in fact below our required contractual minimum fund balance. If we implement the expenditure reductions that are proposed, that's the red component of the bar graph, and then adding on that increase to the revenues through the drought rate gets you the little green piece, so that you see that by the end of the three-year period we're projecting, we would be slightly over our minimum fund balance in the water fund. similar but not quite the same on the sewer fund side. We project that we're going to generate about $2.8 million worth of revenue over the next 3 years on the sewer side. And that compares to, it's about $400,000 less than we thought we would generate. We're not proposing to completely restore that. We're proposing to use some fund balance to help pay for that, but also, again, looking at the opportunities to reduce on the expenditure side. We don't see that those opportunities are available on the capital side nor on the operating side for sewer. And Mr. English was going to speak a little bit more about these projects.
Yeah, certainly. And our sewer rehabilitation projects are pretty critical. Our sewer mains are an important conduit, obviously, for our sewage. And we have a number of facilities throughout the community that are older and due to root intrusion or corrosion or offsets that happen in the line, we have potential leaks and spills. And so we videotape those and monitor where there are potential problems with those lines, and we go in and rehabilitate them, usually through some kind of a lining project. In fact, we just opened up a bid today for a new lining project. It's a critical part of the kind of reliability of our sewer system, and so we would not recommend that be eliminated. It's a huge vulnerability not to have those systems with good integrity. Also, our lift station number one, Force Main, we actually had a problem with that this last year. It's a critical large force main for our sewer system, and that's another one that is problematic. It's right near the Carl's Jr., the basin down there, and we've had some spills in the past, and there's a sensitive habitat area there. That's a critical piece of infrastructure that needs that project, and we would not recommend that be reduced. And so unless you have any questions about those specific projects, I'll turn that over to Debbie to finalize the report.
Can I ask a question at this point? Yes. So based on that, I mean, the original times, and I think I asked this when we went through this first time, but the original schedule for replacement was established through the rate study. And what exactly is it that we're seeing here that was different when the rate study was done that we think we can delay some of these projects?
And in regard to the water or the sewer?
I'm back to the water more than okay. The sewer. I think the sewer rate was included in there as well.
These projects were scheduled at the time of the last rate increase proposed to move forward. We weren't anticipating any delay in these projects previously. I don't know if that answers your question. I'm not doing
a couple of projects were, in other words, when we put together the first, if you could actually go all the way back to one of the slides, there was about $600,000, I believe, in one delayed project. And the potential maybe to delay a second project. And the schedule for those, as I was saying, was put together by an engineer with his estimate. And what is the thinking that says that we can delay those?
Okay, yeah, in regard to those two specific projects, if you want to go back to that screen. Those are just current evaluations of those projects. They need to be done based on staff evaluation of the facilities. We believe that we can get another 3 years out of them. There are many projects that are scheduled on a replacement schedule or some kind of a specific timing based on an engineer's estimate. A facility may have a 20-year life, and so you schedule this replacement in 20 years. Depending on the wear and tear and the conditions, we may be able to get another 5 years out of that vehicle and drive it a little longer. So it's just current evaluation. And so, Shane, you probably answer the question regarding 3 and 4 and why that project can be put off. We would not recommend that it be put off unless we were comfortable with the integrity for the next 3 years.
let me just say, because the second half of that question is, so now we do a rate study 3 years from now, they're going to use the same schedule. Aren't we just going to really see these, the schedule for these delayed projects shorten back up? So, you know, if it was 20 years today, we're going to do it in 5 years. When they look at it in 5 years, they're going to say, oh, you need to do this in 15 years, and you need to generate the funding within 15 years.
It does shorten the window outside of this in the next study for when those projects would be done, and there would be more projects done in a shorter window, and so that would translate into a higher cost, certainly. So you can pay me now or you can pay me later. And so that's really what we're doing here. If we push capital projects off, we're just putting more projects into a narrower window. So you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
With respect to the sewer system and sewer system overflows, is there not also the potential that the city would be fined for events of that nature?
That's correct. That is that vulnerability, particularly that one location.
So as we were talking about on this, with the sewer fund, you can see the slide in front of you presents the fund balance for the sewer fund. If we didn't make any changes, it's kind of the purple color up there. You see that we still are maintaining a fund balance in excess of the minimum that, in anticipation of some rather large projects coming along in future years. And that drought rate is the light blue color that adds a bit of revenue and a bit of fund balance in the next 3 years. So just quickly talking about what does this mean for the average customer. If you are a customer that uses currently uses 10 units of water, on your water side, your current rate is just a little over $90, $91.71. That would increase by $10.13. So that's how the 11% rate increase translates into, based on the number of units of water that you use, you would see between a $10 and $18, the average being about a $14 increase for the residential customers. That's a monthly rate. Actually, it is a monthly rate, yeah. You can see, though, that on a bi-monthly basis, which is how we bill, we still end up, even with our drought rates, being kind of right in the median of where our friends and neighbors are in comparison of pricing of water in our community, our larger community. On the sewer side, if you currently use 10 units of water, you're paying $11.50. This would go to $12.68, so about a little over a dollar. And you know, on the higher end, you're looking at maybe $3. And again, with that drought rate, we're still one of the best values for your sewer dollar out there in our county. So there is a process that is governed by the state constitution. Proposition 218 has been around for about 20, 25 years, provides for a process that we have to follow when we want to increase rates. One of the things we have to do is we have to issue a notice of the intent to increase rates. What are those rates? Provide at least 45 days between when we issue the notice and when we have a public hearing. These rates would become effective with the September billing cycle. You may remember when we were here in May, we anticipated being back to you in July. Because of some issues, we didn't get back to you quite as quickly as we thought. The 218 notice did go out. In two places there are dates, and probably 17 people looked at this, and none of us caught this until after it was printed and mailed. In one case, it says they would take effect in August. In another case, it says September. Obviously, we will implement in September. That is, you know, to everyone's benefit. So we would delay that implementation until September. There is an opportunity for members of the public to protest the rate increase. If we had a majority of ratepayers file a protest, the council would not be able to move forward with a rate increase. A majority of our customers, we have about a little over 6,000 accounts, we would need 3,171 protests in order for the protest process to stop this from happening. I believe this number is now up to 19, but I would defer to the city clerk to provide us with an update of the latest number of protests received.
Yeah, I think it was 19. We had the letters are on the council's desk, but they came in right before the meeting, so I think there were three additional letters.
So with that, the recommendation before you tonight is to conduct a public hearing to consider the temporary adjustments to water and wastewater rates, and if there is no majority protest received, to adopt a resolution establishing those new rates to become effective in September.
First, is there any additional questions for staff?
I do, please.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can you go back to that slide with the purple bar graphs that talks about, and you had the light blue on the top right there? I'm a little confused based on what you said versus what some of the numbers were that we talked about on your previous slides. When you talked about this slide, it seemed to indicate that we would, if we didn't go through with this, we would still have enough of a fund balance. Is that how I did, or did I mishear what you said?
In the sewer fund, we would have a fund balance that exceeds our minimum fund balance. We may find that in future years we would need to make some adjustments, because the reason we're building this fund balance is in anticipation of large capital projects that are going to be needed as identified in our sewer master plan. So, yes, we could not adopt an increase to the sewer rates and still maintain the minimum fund balance. We don't recommend that because we think it would be more prudent to keep the fund balance higher. But it's certainly an option.
And then just kind of playing devil's advocate for a minute, what would happen if, for instance, we got enough protest letters? And the reason I ask the question is, for every letter we get, there's a large number of people that probably have the same thought process but just didn't put a stamp and a letter in the mail. In fact, I think it's proven that that's the case typically with different items. The numbers probably varies from issue to issue, but what would we do if, in fact, we had enough protests? Had that ever crossed your mind in terms of what the other alternative might be, or is there an alternative?
Well, the council would not be able to move forward with the increase based on 218 law, and our alternative would be to reduce expenditures, cut projects. There's a number of things that we would have to do. We could repackage it and go back out to the voters again for another 218 protest, but we just couldn't move forward with that specific increase at that time. That's not the case now, obviously, but hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, I guess I'm just. Well, just for clarity's sake, again, I appreciate both your responses. In terms of the temporary nature of this increase, are we going to have to come back in 3 years and vote on it again? Is that? I'm getting old and forgetful, so can you?
Again, this is a drought rate increase, and it does depend on the weather. If we had a return of normal rainfall and have a water supply that will allow the council to lift the restrictions, and there was consumption returned, it's unfortunate, but our strategy, and that's the case in most agencies, is the funding for our water and sewer systems is based on the volume of water distributed. And so you pay per unit. And the less we have in purchases, the less revenue we make to offset in what amounts to mostly fixed costs. So the kind of funding strategy is detrimental to reductions in supply. So if we return to full amounts of water and people started using it and watering the lawns again, then those rate increases would not be put into effect. We would do a rate study. I think our next rate study is scheduled for 3 years from now anyway, so probably do a rate study and evaluate the circumstances at that time. So this is given the nature of this, you do that rate studies on a regular basis anyway to evaluate your costs and whether or not your payment structure is keeping up with your expenditures.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand why we're doing this. So San Luis did this before we did. I totally get it. I'm just trying to figure out. People ask me, well, everything that the government does, they claim it's temporary, and then it ends up not being temporary. And so that's kind of the nature of my question, because my personal belief is that this drought we have is structural. I'd be surprised if we're not having the same conversation 3 years from now.
This specific rate will expire 3 years from now, so something will have to be modified at that time, and we would come forward with some alternative for the council at that time to consider. You are what's in front of you tonight is a three-year program, and so we would have to do something after that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. First, I'd like to start. We talked about the letters that we received from various members of the community, and the two of the letters specifically question whether there was specific financial justification for the water rate increase disclosed to the citizens in the Prop 218 notice. And so I was wondering if I could defer to City Attorney Whittem to address those real concerns expressed by the public.
Yes, we have previously reviewed the notice and have, again, taken a look at the notice, and we are confident that the notice complies with the requirements of Prop 218. The California Constitution sets forth what must be included in that notice, and we are confident that we have included all those required elements in the notice. The purpose of the notice is to let the public know that this is something you're thinking about doing, that they have an opportunity to protest, that there's a public hearing where they can come and participate. So the notice doesn't have to give all of the information. It doesn't have to be as complex as the analysis that was done that is available, that is referenced in the notice and the staff report and, of course, the presentation tonight. It's more to serve as a notice or an alert that this is happening, and if you want more information, get involved. The notice itself gives a phone number of the city to call if you have any questions or if you want any additional information. So we do believe that it meets the legal requirements of Prop 218.
I would like to add that notice also did reference the members, residents, to specific report that had all that detailed information. So that detailed information could not be provided on the notice. It would be too long and cumbersome. But it did refer them to specific reports that on the website that they could look at. So.
Okay. And then one of the another portion of one of the letters has to do with the decision to increase the general fund, and I believe this is talking about our reserves from 15% to 35%. The general fund money is to be used in times of need, emergencies, loss of funding. As of now, the Water Department, which is the enterprise fund, is in need of money due to the fact that the revenues coming in from the water usage are decreasing. Why can't the Water Department get the money from the general fund if it is only going to be short-term? Right now, the City Council says it is going to be short-term because the water rate will only go going to be for a three-year period. So I guess my question there out of this inquiry would be, you know, then with the general fund reserve, you know, wouldn't this be considered an emergency, and wouldn't that be an opportunity then to do that short-term, reevaluate, and then with the potential of not having to move forward with the rate increase?
I'm not aware of any legal restriction that would keep you from providing general fund support to an enterprise fund. It is definitely a policy-level consideration, and we'd probably need a little more analysis on that before I could make any kind of a recommendation of whether or not, you know, you would want to entertain that idea. But I'm not aware of any legal restriction that would prevent you from doing so.
Okay.
And I would like to add that This is one important topic to the community, obviously, but we have several other important funding issues. Mm-hmm. You go down the list, fire department, roads, infrastructure. So we would want, if that was the will of the council, to use general fund reserves to backfill this. We would want to present you with other needs at the same
time. Well, basically the comparison of what we would lose related to either service levels or other parts of our infrastructure maintenance or other capital improvement projects, we would have to consider and balance all of that. I guess for me, I know this was focused on the water fund and focused on rate increases, but for me it would have been maybe more comprehensive to kind of say, well, this is, and I know we reviewed this in May, so we're a little bit, I should have brought this up in May, but it's like, this is what we have within the water fund, these are the needs we have, we're kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't, because of the needs for our infrastructure and ongoing with our needs for our water maintenance, etc. But then we really haven't explored any of the general fund resources to maybe add to lessen the blow of the rate increase. So that's kind of why I'm throwing it out. Plus there was other, you know, information in the letters we received kind of, you know, leaning toward that direction.
We did not present that as an option to you. However, that is a policy decision, as Director Malcote mentioned. It was not discussed in May. We did not bring that forward as an option tonight.
Okay. And then this is for Director English, or Acting Interim City Manager English, and it has to do with when you were describing the different projects related to the projects and the amount, there was some wording that I thought I heard related to postponement would not impact the water fund regarding well number 11 and well number 7, and I wasn't quite sure what you meant by the postponement wouldn't impact the water fund. Do you know what I'm...
Those projects, I believe, are largely funded by two alternative funds. So there are impact fees that are paid, and we have the Water Availability Fund, and there's the Water Facilities Fund. Those are supported by other fees, development fees, impact fees. And so a large portion of those projects' costs will come from those accounts and not from the general water fund.
Okay. Okay. And I think we already clarified that the about the five-year rate study, so I don't need to ask that. So just for the public's benefit, the contractually obligated minimum fund balance amount would actually be what, Director Malcote?
So we have a contractual obligation to maintain 1 year of debt service on the Lopez bonds. It's our share of that. It equates to about $1.4 million a year. It varies slightly from year to year with the bond payment, but essentially that is the contractual minimum amount that we must maintain based on our contract with the county and Lopez.
Okay. And then this goes back to the actual rate increase, and I think it's on page 4 of the staff report. You had a slide of it, the $10.13. And I just wanted to clarify, because the staff report indicates on average water customer will be approximately $10 to $18 per billing cycle, but then in parentheses it says, or $5 to $9 per month. So as a customer, then is my rate going up $27 in the cycle if it's a three-month cycle? Or
I'm sorry, I believe I did misspeak earlier. These are bi-monthly rates.
It would be.
We had a discussion of whether we should publish monthly rates or the bi-monthly rates, and I have forgotten that, yes, indeed, these are the bi-monthly rates.
So it would be 10 on the bi-monthly?
It would be 10 on the bi-monthly.
Very good. Okay, rate. Good. That does make a little bit of difference. And then So I think we already talked about how the general fund would be a policy decision. So then I go back, and maybe I'm asking the same question, so bear with me. It has to do with, so we have other capital projects. We already mentioned the road maintenance. We already mentioned the list that we have with our capital improvement. So would there also be then a way to look at the other capital projects that may not be as critical to our, basically, our day-to-day and our survival, like our water and sewer, and take a look at those and rearrange those to come up with the $1 million each year or the total of $3 million. I'm thinking of the next agenda item, the City Council Chamber remodel. I know that's from a different fund, and we have to keep track of our apples and oranges, which is very confusing at times. But I guess my question here would be, you know, is there options through our other funds that are not protected to be able to shift those monies for projects that might be out 2017-18, 2019-20 already projected that we could then...
Might it be helpful to perhaps help answer Mayor Pro Tem's questions if we have a really brief discussion of enterprise funds and what the state law is regarding pay for those things and where the money can be used?
I guess for me, if we want to short circuit all of this, I guess for me is I don't feel I have enough information to justify. And so I keep kind of picking away at all of these, like, well, what about this, what about that, related to being able to come up with another path to make up for the shortfall besides a rate increase. And so I'll just leave it at that, and then we can move on. But that's really where my questions are really focused. So, I mean, I'm just need to have that discussion. So instead of, you know, prolonging the meeting and going line by line.
Yeah, I'll take a brief stab at that. Generally, an enterprise account is for the comprehensive cost for that enterprise, and there could be a mechanism where you take general fund or money from other accounts and put it into that enterprise account to support it. We did not bring those options forward to you tonight. Could we take sales tax dollars and support this account? That would be a council policy decision. We don't necessarily have the nexus in what the sales tax was originally approved for to support that decision, but that could be a council policy decision if you so choose to do so. We did not bring that comprehensive list of options to you tonight. We really looked at that enterprise in itself how it could function without external support from another fund. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's fine, and it's not a criticism. It's just, you know, part of my process related to balance and considering everything that we can. So we can move on at this point, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
If I could just add to the conversation, under Prop 218, with property-related fees such as this, the city is fully entitled to charge the customers the cost of providing that service. And that is generally what municipalities everywhere do, is you charge the cost of providing the service.
And fundamentally no more, is that not the case?
You're not allowed to charge more. If you charge more, then it's considered a tax of a different type that requires a whole other approval process. But so the city is entitled to charge the cost of providing that service, and that's generally what cities do with services such as this. And then your general fund is there to provide all the other services that the city is expected to provide to its citizens. So what is being requested here is what is generally done everywhere.
So I have one question only, and that is to I'm going to give an example or a model, and I'd like to know if this is accurate or not. Here's our fixed costs. The city sells water on a per gallon or per unit, whatever basis. So we do rate studies to bring the amount of water that we sell on a commodity rate basis up to that level to cover the fixed costs, essentially. So when we use 35% less volume, we have 35% less income into the water fund, but the fixed costs are still the same. So with the conservation that's been done, people's rates have actually gone down. The total amount they're paying monthly has gone down somewhat because they're using less water. And what we're having to do now is raise the rates so that based on that lower level of consumption, that comes up to meet the cost structure again, and it's relatively neutral. So in terms of lessening the blow, the actual amount of money that the median or whatever household would pay is effectively been the same over time. It's just that you're actually getting fewer gallons of water for your dollar because we have to cover the costs of the system. Is that a relatively accurate description?
Yes, I would say relatively accurate. It is a sort of simplistic example of how that works, but part of the reason is because there is a portion of your bill that is fixed and a portion of your bill that is based on the commodity charge. But in its simplest terms, what you're saying is accurate, yes.
Okay, thank you. With that, council's asked questions.
I got skipped.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Guthrie.
All the other questions I asked, I used up my allotment. But so I just had just a couple quick, just to follow up real quickly on Councilmember Brown's deal on the sewer fund. So would it be fair to say that we have unscheduled capital projects, whereas in the water fund they're scheduled, and that's why we're building up this fund for no apparent reason?
I wouldn't say they're unscheduled. I would say they're just outside the window of what we're looking at. We're just looking at this period of time. We have the sewer master plan that looks much farther into the future, so we know that those projects are out there, and we know that they exist. They're just not within this window of time.
That's a better explanation. And then there were a number of questions in the letters about the, quote, Lopez fee that is on property tax, and then we talk about the city's bonds. And that's something I wanted to follow up with to clarify. I understood that the city pays for, I actually think it's the it's not really for the dam, it's for the water treatment plant. But so I just wanted to follow up on that. Is there another Lopez fee that is on the property tax?
Yes, there is. There's a component of the Lopez cost, which is on everybody, even within the city limits and outside the city limits, for Lopez costs. And that originated back in the 60s, and it still stays in place. And so it is on top of the amount of money that you pay for the water costs, which is embedded in our fees. So that is true.
Those are related to the capital costs of the original building of the dam? Or?
I don't know that. Shane, do you know that?
Okay, thanks.
Now, don't quote me, but I do pay that tax if I live in Oceano. It's on your property tax bill. And back in 1963, when the Central Coast portion of the State Water Project was envisioned, the county put out a bond measure, and everyone that owns property in the county pays, you'll see it says State Water, and that's a portion of your property tax. Even if you don't get any State Water, which a lot of people don't, they still pay it on the property tax. Also, there was a bond measure for the seismic rehabilitation of the dam, which was a bond. And that's also paid by not only through your property tax for the people in the city, but also out in the county that's in the flood control district. So two of those. Whereas
the fee is a seismic fee.
Yes. That was a bond that went before the voters. We have a state revolving fund loan, the county does, for the treatment plant, which was $26 million, which is recovered through our rates, along with all the other contractors, and they're part of the obligation. So a loan and two bonds. And one's a really old bond. And I don't know what the story is, if it ever get paid, but okay. Does that make sense?
I appreciate that. And it's the seismic bond that I...
Yeah, and that was $30 million to retrofit the base of the dam.
There were also comments there. We had to transfer the potential that you could transfer from the general fund to pay this down. There was also the suggestion that if we collected excess money, somehow we could transfer it into the general fund.
That would be incorrect. We would not be able to transfer money from the water fund into the general fund for anything other than the services that the general fund provides to the water fund.
So if at the end of 3 years, the fund was inflated, that some magically, people started using water again, I guess because we had it, that this money would all be sitting there, and in the next study, since this one would go away, the next study would take into account that we had a larger reserve than we expected.
That's correct. The next study would, all of the money that's generated by the water system stays in the water fund. It pays out the costs of the water, but any residual amounts over and above the direct costs of year-to-year operations carry forward, sometimes purposefully, like in the case of the sewer fund, where we are building up that fund balance in order to pay for a future project. Those monies are retained in the water fund. The next rate study would say, okay, what do you currently have on hand in your fund balance? What do you foresee as the cost for the next period of time, whether it's 3 years or 5 years or however far you want to look into the future? So those monies are retained by the water fund and to be used for the water system.
And that's more of a comment. All right, thank you.
Okay, I apologize for the length of the discussion, but this is a public hearing, and members of the public are welcome to comment on this item at this time. Linda, please.
Grande. My experience is you raise rates, they never go down, because you will find something else to apply it to, whether it's a pension fund or somebody you're hiring or you're doing something. Your monies are going to be going to something else, and they will never go back. So this temporary rate increase is a permanent rate increase. I was in San Diego for many years. They did the same thing. We were on a restricted amount of water. Never went down. They just kept the money and they kept raising rates as it will be. You're not. I understand what Shane was saying about how much, what they do to maintain our equipment. That's normal business. You have a property or you have equipment, you have to maintain it. That's normal. That's not out of the ordinary. Okay, so by saying, hey, we do this every day, we do that, that's normal. So I don't see anything unusual about what you have to do to maintain the equipment. That's what you have to do. So nothing out of the ordinary. And rates never go down. And you should have thought about that. We've got all that excess. I don't see where we need this rate increase, at least not at 10 or 11%. I don't think it's very important to do that at this point. You also have developers doing things. Let's have a building moratorium so you have less usage of the general water that the rest of us who are paying for it now have to, we'll have more available to us to use. But you need a building moratorium on top of all of this. I think it's very important. Nick has gotten his way, obviously, with some of you council members and has building or sold off his stuff. But it's a fact. we have too much building going on in the small corridor, and if we stop some of that or just we're more aware of what we're doing with a few bits of water that we have now, I think it's important that we look at no more development, let the people living here use the water, and then we'll be able to maintain our Tree City verbiage on our flag here, because all the trees are dying in my neighborhood. Nobody's watering their trees. They don't want to, and they're dying. So what are you going to do then? Plant trees or just look at dead trees? My neighborhood is really looking bad. I'm probably one of the few people maintaining a lawn. It looks really bad. I'm sorry. I'm not for this. Put my name down. I am protesting this rate increase. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to comment?
First of all, I do appreciate getting clean water piped to my house and dirty water piped away from my house. But my issues are kind of with the way this was presented. First of all, 2 years ago, this body passed a five-year rate schedule taking us through 2019. With rate increases averaging between 2 1/3 and 3 3/4% per year, different things vary a little bit. All right. Now, we're calling for an 11% increase, but that's above and beyond this 2 1/3 to 3 3/4. So we're actually looking at 13 2/3 to 15% rate increase for September. So I have an issue with not coming forward with the real numbers. Second of all, there's this same increase is going on with the fixed charges. So did this body mess up 2 years ago in that it's 11% short now? Or did the definition of fixed charges change? From what I've heard, I have to believe that if we stopped using water today so that there were no consumption monies, the fixed charges wouldn't cover it. So fixed and consumption seem to be crossing over. Then temporary. I'm sorry, but I don't agree with the word temporary. It states that it can return if the drought ends, but we haven't defined what the drought ending is. Do we need that one miracle year to fill up Lopez, or do we need 3 years of above average rainfall, which takes us to 2019? And we need consumption returning to normal. Well, is that the 2013 usage before we had the reduced mandatory reductions with penalties? If so, that can never be achieved without everybody paying thousands of dollars in penalties. So there's nothing temporary about this increase. Or the way this thing is proposed. Because both of those things have to happen, the end of the drought and consumption returning to normal. Consumption cannot return to normal without great impact. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other comment on this item?
My name's Otis Page. I live at 606 Myrtle Street. Good evening. I came to the conclusion that I would wait on analyzing this matter until I saw the staff report after reading the notice for the hearing. And the reason why I wanted to do that is to really try to embrace what I thought is a potential problem here. One time I spoke to Steve Adams about the issue of transfers, and we argued about what that amount to. As a business person, that's your profit on sale of water. So I'm going to give you just a few conclusions here in the time I'm allotted. Number one is that the issue here is about the residents. It's not about the industrial component, it's not about the farmers. The issue is not about the competency of how we are managing our technically our affairs or even the administration of it. But I'd like to remind the council that regarding 218 is concerned, you're assuming that there's no fraudulent misrepresentation. Because if there is, there would be a contest in court. The issue here, then, as I saw it, was the representation was you're doing this to protect the technical infrastructure providing water, and I'm only addressing water. I saw a dilemma here that I could not reconcile the data that's provided in the documents. One document being the May 10th as it pertains to the water. The other is your general publication of documents. They don't agree. My experience in business is when you see numbers that don't reconcile, step back, audit it. I believe in good faith there is a reason to do this. But at this point, the numbers don't support it. I believe that there is no exposure technically on supporting the infrastructure of water with the present revenue scheme. None. The exposure you have is the transfer amounts. For example, in the May 10th document, it shows, for example, up at 78% of the costs are transfers. Your document, May 10th. All right? Furthermore, it's very interesting. There was a jump in revenue of 60% from the end of year 2014 to 2015. A 60% increase in revenue. How did that occur? So my time is out. I'm saying the numbers don't add up. They're your numbers. You should just sit back and audit this and make sure that the numbers really jive. Because at this point, they don't. And in fact, your representation in the notice is not supported by the facts. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to comment on this item?
Good evening, staff and council. My name is Leanne Akins, and I'd like to take my 3 minutes to read a letter that was submitted to you earlier today by Paul Quinlan, who's my neighbor on Cornwall Avenue. I'm going to try and get through as much as I can. The city of Arroyo Grande is proposing to increase the water rates by 11% for the next 3 years, basically ending in June of 2019. In June of 2019, the city of Arroyo Grande will reassess the need to keep all, part, or none of the rate increase. The question proposed is why the city of Arroyo Grande needs to increase the water rates. The city claims that due to the citizens conserving water in an outstanding 38% from June 2013 to June 2016 has caused the revenues of the water department to drastically decline. The revenues have declined so much so that the water department will have a $500,000 deficit if the council does not increase the water rates. The basis of this information comes from the May 10, 2016 City Council meeting. During the May 10th meeting, no financial information that substantiates the revenue expenditure was given or made available to the general public. Currently, the city's historical budget data shows water revenues exceed expenses by substantial margins, which result in the excess revenues being transferred into the general fund. Since no financial information was given to the general public, it leads me to believe the city has other intentions for this revenue. Is the city using this increase in revenue to increase the general fund to the 35% that the city wants? How can the city do this? It is simple. borrow money from the water department account, and place the money in the general fund. Sure, the money will be paid back to the water department with interest, but it may not be for 10 or 15 years. In the meantime, the citizens are given the perception the increase in water rates is going to keep the water department afloat during these times of a drought and drop in revenue. If the staff report is read, it shows water revenues decreasing on the average by $1 million a year over 3 years, which is approximately $21 million going to the $18 million over 3 years. The three-year average revenues going from $7 million to $6 million. Even at $6 million, there should be a substantial margin of revenue over cost. Again, the question is this excess money going to the general fund? Are the transfers out being used to fund other sources, such as Lopez Lake Fund, City Hall Loan, or others? Are the citizens of AG paying for the Lopez Lake Fund through another account right now? Look at your water bill. Why is the city paying for the Lopez Lake Fund with transfers out of the water fund? If this is true and the money is going to the general fund, I ask, aren't the citizens of Arroyo Grande already impacted by the drought and the water usage financial penalties? I know I'm out of time. I think one of my questions, though, that I would like to ask is, at an earlier meeting, it was when the rate increases were discussed, one of the rates increased to 11%. Well, part of that was in order to keep the Cash for Grass program, which cost us $300,000. So I'm wondering if that increase of additional 1% was necessary. And I hope that you take the time to read the rest of Paul Quinlan's letter, because it actually pinpoints and follows some of the same line of questioning that Otis just brought up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other comment on the item? Going once. Is there any other comment on the item? Going twice. Third time. Any other comment? Okay, hearing... Briefly, yes.
As recently as August of 14, the Lopez fee was a separate line item on the water bill. Now it evidently has been combined into that fixed charge. Perhaps you want to pull it back out as a separate item.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Okay, at this time then we will close the public hearing. There were a couple of questions asked. One is about excess revenue transferred to the general fund. Can we get a brief explanation of that, please?
Certainly, and I think we've explained that a little bit already. We can only charge for fees in the Water Enterprise Fund to cover the exact costs. We do charge for services that are provided to the Enterprise Fund. I think one of the confusions is that we actually do have transfers out of the Water Fund to pay the General Fund for overhead costs for the services that are provided directly to the Water Fund. And that, as an example, is the payroll clerk who pays for there's a portion of that person's salary to cover the cost of the staff in the water fund. And so, yes, there are charges. There is time for the certain support staff that cover and do functions that are related specific to the water fund. We can only charge our customers for those services, nothing beyond that. So there aren't transfers out of the water fund to support something that's not water fund related.
Thank you. That seems to be a common conception, but I wanted to make sure that we had the answer to that well articulated. Coming back to council then for comment, first of all.
Go first, Mr. Guthrie.
So I think I'll start with, you know, this is based on the study that we looked at 2 years ago. I think all five of us voted in favor of this moving forward at that time using that study and those costs. The costs in there have not changed. I haven't heard anybody challenge the cost that were projected in there. What has changed is the revenue. The revenues are down because we have marginal costs. The example the mayor gave is a good one. An even simpler example would be we could just do a pure fixed cost, and we wouldn't be here with a rate increase at all because your costs would not be marginal. You would have no marginal costs. The purpose of having marginal costs was to create incentive to save water and for people who use more water to pay more than people who use less water. And frankly, I advocated for actually having a bigger split. I'm glad we didn't do that because we'd be looking at a bigger rate increase today, but maybe we would have gotten more water savings earlier. There is some confusion about the water saving that was built into there. As noted by staff, it's 2% a year, roughly 11%, I guess, if you compound it, that we were hoping to achieve, and instead we're at 35 or 38%. So there's a difference in that marginal cost, and that's what creates this problem. The comment that our costs are normal, that's true, but they're still fixed. What's abnormal is the income, was the unanticipated income. So I think looking at this, based on what we did in the past, we have a really clear picture of why we have to increase rates and why we have to increase them substantially. Everybody's probably tired of hearing me talk about Santa Barbara and having gone through something similar, but in Santa Barbara, we went through something actually probably a little bit more of a crisis, and had at that time they did use purely incentivized marginal rates, four tiers. I think it was like eight times as expensive as when you got up into the upper tiers, and then on top of that, they bought new water in state water and what was the other water they bought? Anyway, there's two pieces of water that they bought. At any rate, then the use never went up. Even when they had the big rain and Lake Achuma filled, use never went up. So in the comment that these are probably not temporary, they're probably not, because I will be very surprised if we see water use go back up to where we're just saving 10% over 2013. The comment that we should transfer money from the general fund or from the sales tax fund, I think when we look at here just not too long ago, we looked at a projection that shows our general fund dipping into reserves. And with a lot of consternation, including voting against those adjustments because the reserve fund at some point would fall below a minimum. This is actually the exact same scenario we're talking about here, where we have a fund balance. The only difference here is that this fund balance is spent in large amounts. It's not spent every year at a, not really the same rate, but it's not spent, if it's spent in large amounts. So there's the illusion that you have a lot of money in the bank, but it's already committed. So I think the idea here that we could just transfer funds out of the general fund and make up $3.2 million in 3 years, I think is naive. I wish I had a softer word than that even. I mean, we just had, for instance, tonight, we just voted an additional $79,000 in order to provide funding for the police department. Just to go back to the temporary raise, there's actually the water use clearly will likely be. It's also very likely that we will be coming back with some sort of additional water source, maybe even before 3 years, that we'll be looking to fund by some means. Might be a bond, be difficult, be a lot easier to do it this way, but that'll be somebody else's decision. So yes, this is the beginning of what will likely be some more increases in the future, because we do need a more stable water supply and we need to be able to pay for it. It's not cheap. I did hear several of the comments in letters referred to, that this is not, there's no new water here, you're raising rates and we're getting no new water. I think we've made clear why that's the case. We do have additional funding, and I believe it's $150,000, not $300,000, for that would go into the cash for grass. And if I got that number wrong, I'll just interrupt myself here.
$150,000 over 3 years is what would be provided by the additional 1%. I think she was, the speaker may have been referring to what we've previously spent on the Cash for Grass program. Okay.
So in my mind, that is new water. I mean, because we have the opportunity here, this window of opportunity that we have while everyone is thinking really seriously, and frankly, everyone has brown lawns, the opportunity we have that people would permanently change them is significant. I know last time I commented on that I'd forgotten to amortize it out. It's by far the cheapest water out there that we could possibly find. Probably won't find enough to satisfy everybody, but it really is. That's why I insisted that we put it in there, because we have this window of opportunity. If it rains like crazy starting tomorrow and everybody goes back to using it the way, then that opportunity would be lost. But even if it wasn't spent, that money will just be sitting in there for this next round that we will almost certainly do in 3 years where we look at this funding again. Fixed versus consumption. Yeah, as I noted, there is the fixed fund. I think originally we did just have the fixed fund at the Lopez fund, and when they did the rate increases, that they included some in order to cushion this kind of a blow, or cushion the changes in income based on consumption use. More was put in fixed, and that's the name. It might be less confusing to split it out. But frankly, it's only going to be when we're doing a rate increase like we are at this point. There were two issues that came up in several of the letters. One was moratorium. The other one had to do with gray water. Neither of those have really any effect. In fact, if anything, if we had a lot of development or we had people start using a lot of gray water, our rates would the rates would be negatively affected by gray water because there'd be even less consumption. And would actually be positively affected by a moratorium, by infinitesimal amounts, but would be negatively affected by a moratorium because there would be fewer people to share in the cost, particularly the fixed costs. Just a couple of side notes. The deal, if you want to see what happens when you don't do this, look at Paso Robles. Paso Robles made a mistake, got caught in 10 years, and it took them 10 years to correct that mistake. The result was that they delayed the fixing their sewer plant for years and years, and just recently did that, and that even though they had paid for Nacimiento water, they had to pump it into the ground and pump it back out because they didn't have money to treat it. So there are consequences to not funding things in advance. So I'm prepared to move forward with this tonight. I do think that even if we, you know, just punted completely and just said, okay, we'll just delay all the projects, when we look at this again in 3 years, they'll be right back. It's not like we're moving them 20 years in the future. We're moving them 5 years. We're delaying them 5 years. But the actual schedule will be the same in the end. Otherwise, if we doubted those numbers, we should have doubted them back when the rate study came through. So I am prepared to move forward this evening. Thank you.
Member Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I appreciate all the comments. There's not a person on staff or on council that wanted to raise rates, I can assure you. That's one of the most painful things you do as a public servant, because you know you're affecting people's pocketbook, and people understand their pocketbook if they don't understand anything else. So this has been a thoughtful process. That being said, I have a few other comments. One is, I do believe that we need to do a moratorium, because it's a poke in the eye when you tell people, hey, guess what, you're going to get fined if you use too much water, but we're going to develop and we're going to add X land to the south. So that needs to be talked about, and I'm firmly think we need to have a more serious discussion about that. Secondly, I am against deferred maintenance. Staff has done an outstanding job about talking about buildings, roads, everything else. We have a habit of not planning ahead and not paying for things and deferring things until the last minute, and then it's like it's a fire and we got to put it out. And we need to stop doing that. So I'm against it. Deferred maintenance. If it's painful now, it's going to be much more painful years from now. So from that perspective, we have to change our thinking from let's defer it, to let's take our medicine, do what we have to do, for the people that come after us so that they don't have to bear the burden of it. I appreciate the gentleman's comments about the rate study. You were very articulate, and I appreciate that. I've had the same concerns. But that being said, you can't plan water to the nth degree. And we did the best with what we had at the time regarding information. And like Jim said, a lot of the costs and all that were already determined, and I don't think there's any change in that. I'm more concerned about the fact that this is not a temporary increase. This is a permanent increase, because my personal opinion, and it is only my personal opinion, that the drought that we're in is structural, that it's not temporary, and that we in 3 years are going to be dealing with this question once again. And that's the part that scares me. I really appreciate when Shane gets up and is very optimistic, because I'm a stick in the mud on this issue, and I get a little negative. So it's nice to hear positive thoughts about this issue. But I am deathly afraid what we're going to be talking about 3 and 5 years from now, because I don't see on the horizon any discussion of things getting back to normal. And I pray for miracles every day, but I haven't had much luck. So, anyway, I understand people's angst over this issue. I also believe that if we had 19 letters, that represents a heck of a lot more people than 19. It probably is 500 to 1,000 people, because for every person that didn't write a letter, there's other people that wish they had, or people that are just trying to earn a living that don't have time to put pencil to paper and do what they need to do. So I do take this seriously, and I think the whole council does. We don't do this lightly. So with that, I am ready to move forward, reluctantly, but I am ready to move forward.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd also like to commend staff for diligently providing answers to our questions, also answering questions from the public, and also appreciate everyone who came here tonight to offer their comments and also give us their insights via a written letter. I appreciate Mr. Guthrie's analysis related to the rate study and kind of walking us through that, and also Director Malicote's information related to the rate study and how all of that worked out, and the comparisons between the other jurisdictions. But here's my problem, and I still had this problem back in May, and since that time I've been reviewing the justifications for the rate increase. I can understand them specifically as it relates to the need, the fixed costs, even the marginal costs. I really understand that, but I can't get past the fact that the timing of the rate increase, the tremendous efforts that our community has made to conserving water, the 35% reduction, this is the new norm. The paradigm has shifted. San Luis Obispo City years ago had water shortages, and their per unit, per day, per household did not waver from that reduction, regardless of how much rain we had, how much water we have. And so I think Aurora Grande is in that same kind of position now. It's the new normal for people to continue their conservation, regardless of the rainfall, regardless of what our options are. And so I keep going back to, you know, what happens in 3 years. It seems like based on the 35%, if that's consistent, then we're going to need to keep going back and reconsider rates and reconsider rates. And I understand that. I just have trouble accepting it based on the timing, based on everybody's efforts for conservation. I'm still struggling with the fact that there isn't other options for us, as naive as I may be related to that. I just
still think that there has to be other options and more comprehensive. I don't feel as strongly about the sewer rate increases. Those are more nominal. The infrastructures, the maintenance, the filtration systems, the delivery, I think is more maybe a, I don't know if more critical is the right way to describe it, but we will have fines. We have public health issues if those systems fail. It seems like on the water side, there's a little bit better ability to continue proactive maintenance. So I guess with that being said, I still go back to my original concerns that I stated in May. I would be supportive of the sewer rate, but I can't support moving forward with either a 10% and certainly the 11%. I understand for the cash for grass, the conservation programs, but that's an additional 1% that all the other residences are going to be paying for other residents to take out their grass, you know, to take out their grass. And I don't know if that's a real fair and balanced approach to that. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Okay. At the beginning of Shan's presentation, he came to the podium and he said, "How are we doing?" And the answer to that is we're in the position of having asked you to conserve water, and you've come through fabulously. You've far exceeded the governor's mandated target, approaching 40%, which is absolutely amazing. So on the one hand, I say, great job, congratulations. And on the other hand, I'm in the unfortunate position of in being a declared candidate for re-election, of having to tell you that yes, I have to raise your water rates because due to the conservation that's gone, the revenues to the water department are very substantially lower than they were and are insufficient to cover the cost of the operation. So looking at the various components of that, I have notes all over the page, so please bear with me. A couple of years ago, we were looking at water rate studies and so forth, and we were fairly confident that, hey, El Nino was coming. That's a good thing. Well, El Nino came and went, and we didn't get any rain from that. Now we're looking at a La Nina year, and that goes to the idea that is this a permanent increase? I tend to agree with Councilmember Brown that we're probably seeing the drought as a systemic change here, and if that's the case, consider the last time Lopez was full. If we all knew what situation we were going to be in now, we would have started cutting back when Lopez was full rather than waiting until it was half empty to start conserving. So even if Lopez fills tomorrow, we're hoping that the impetus to conservation continues, that we've ingrained these habits of conservation going forward, because if Lopez does fill up in a year and we squander the water as we have in the past, we'll be right back in the same situation after a few dry years. So I think the reason for cash for grass and the reason for the various measures we've taken, the low-flow toilets, all of that is to permanently reduce water use. And we're going to need your help with that, even if Lopez filled tomorrow, because that is a fixed amount of resource that may have to last us for many years. And again, if we'd gone back to the last time Lopez was full and were able to conserve from there, it would be much easier to deal with this than what we're seeing right now. So the comment was made, nothing out of the ordinary. And again, that's exactly correct in terms of the maintenance. Our maintenance is great. They did happen to itemize it all out. But those costs need to be paid no matter how many units of water we sell. And so, again, the thing, as I think Mr. Guthrie pointed out, is that what's changed is the consumption part of the equation. Here's your fixed cost. Here's what the, your consumption used to be and the payment you used to be making. Now your consumption's gone down, and accordingly you're not covering those costs, which continue day by day. So that's basically where we're at. I agree strongly with Council Member Brown, no deferred maintenance. In the water system, I look on the TV and I see systems that are not as well maintained perhaps as they should be, like Los Angeles, and you see these huge streets down there that are flowing water because they've had water main breaks about every third day or something. What does that do to our resource in Lopez? And so I don't want to see us get to the point where we have routine water main breaks. I want to maintain our system today so that we don't squander the water with faults in the system. Perhaps I can even greater emphasis on that in the sewer system. The costs of sewer system overflows are unacceptable, period. They're unacceptable to the environment, they're unacceptable to our quality of life, and they're unacceptable in terms of the fines that would be imposed that the city would have to somehow pay, which, again, is going to affect ratepayers and or quality of service. So the idea that money is being transferred into the general fund, I think that was well explained by City Manager English, is that only those costs that are directly attributable to the water enterprise are transferred into the general fund. It's against state law to do anything else. So the water fund is not a cash cow for general fund. The water being an enterprise fund, the other businesses of the city, the police department, the fire department, our roads and maintaining our roads, our parks, those things are our general fund type of projects. They're not enterprise funds. So the water and sewer departments are basically enterprise funds, and they're subject to those rules and requirements. Moratorium, that may be wise, but again, we're going to need to continue our conservation efforts even if we had water. So yes, I think this will end up being essentially a permanent increase. This particular increase will expire in 3 years, and I'll have to be brought up again, but my hope is that our conservation efforts continue, and with that will come the necessity of maintaining a higher per unit volume rate to make sure that we cover those costs and don't see the damage and the adverse impacts of deterioration of the systems. So with that, I apologize for the long-windedness of that. I'm obviously prepared to support this moving forward.
Mr. Mayor, I'd make a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande establishing water and water rate charges as set out in Attachment A.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we establish the water and wastewater rates effective September 1st. As noted in the attachment. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
No.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Measure passes 3-1 with one absent.
Take a 5-minute break.
Yes. That's the end of the public hearings for this evening. We do have more on the agenda, but let's take a 10-minute break. Okay, we're coming back to order after the break. Thank you for your patience with that. Item 11 is old business. We have none this evening. Item 12 is new business. And I will ask the city clerk to please introduce item 12A.
Item 12A is consideration to reject all bids for construction of the City Council Chambers Accessibility Improvement and Audio, Video, and Sound System Project, PW 2015-14.
City Manager English.
Certainly, Mayor Hill, members of council, tonight we have before you an item that we were hoping that we would be recommending award for tonight, and that we would be moving to construction on what we consider an important project and functionally important improvements for the building and for the conduct of these meetings. And so tonight, however, we are recommending that you reject all the bids. We only had one bid for this project, and we will talk a little bit about why we think that was the case. And in front of you is a slideshow that we will go through in just a moment. Tonight, we have to provide a brief presentation. Our Michelle Stokes, she's with Rivatt and Albright. The associates, they are the architectural design firm who helped design this project. And Eric Kalpikoff, he's with Jensen Audio, and he'll talk about the audio-video component of the project. We did have our council meetings scheduled in other buildings, and we're ready to pull the trigger. However, we opened bids 2 weeks ago, and we only received one bid, which is over the budgeted amount. So we're going to discuss, first of all, the design of the project and get your comments on the design of the project, and then list some options for you tonight. With that, I'd like Michelle Stokes with Rivatt Albrecht to come forward and present to you on the design of the project. So you can come to the podium, please.
Good evening. Michelle Stokes, as Jeff said, Rivatt Albrecht. First of all, we start with the demolition floor plan, and we'll start with the council chambers room, which is this room, of course. So, first of all, we need to pull back the carpet for the conduit cabling, which will be around the perimeter of the room. And then also, we will be running some conduit from this wall location under the slab over to this location, so we don't have this situation with the carpet and the cords and everything. Also, we'll be removing a portion of the CMU wall at this location. Right there. And for a door opening, it will go into a future staff room. The storage room near grid line 2, which is this storage room, we'll have the water heater removed, and then the kitchen, we will remove the cabinets, the plumbing fixtures, and the flooring. The restroom, we'll remove plumbing fixtures, flooring, and all of the accessories in there. The conference room, we will remove the carpeting, and there's a tackable wall along this wall right here, and the electric panel. There's also an electric panel on the north wall next to the restroom that we'll have to remove as well. The lobby will remove the vinyl flooring and the wood paneling that's on the second story level to make it more modern looking, and we'll replace it with the gypboard. Okay, then all of the walls between grid lines 2 and 3 will be removed. Interior non-bearing walls will be removed for the remodel. Next, we'll move on to the new floor plan. In council chambers, we'll be providing new carpeting possibly, but it's an ad alternate, and that would be if that's approved. We'll provide a new door into the staff room, which is the green area you're looking at. We'll provide a ramp at the dais location. It's a 6-foot long ramp. It's for accessibility, for wheelchair accessibility, for somebody to get on the dais without any tough effort. So the storage room will be adding a new tankless water heater, and then also there'll be an HVAC, a portion of an HVAC unit in there that will supply air conditioning and heating into the staff room. The women's restroom will have two new toilets, partitions, a sink, and an air dryer for a hand dryer, and there will be a sound insulating wall between the women's restroom and the staff room. Also, those two doors going into the staff room will have some kind of soundproof type hardware so the sound can't travel from one wall to the other or through the door. Also, the men's restroom, we have one new toilet, one urinal, and one lavatory. We'll be providing new linoleum flooring in the women's and the men's restrooms, and as well as the lobby and the hallway, which will have new linoleum flooring as well. Moving on to the demo reflected ceiling plan. The council chambers room, everything will remain lighting, ceiling grid, and also the acoustic panels. And that's due to budget constraints. We will be removing the speakers in the ceiling, and those will be replaced along with the AV package. The storage rooms, the lighting will remain. Custodial room, lighting and jitboard ceiling remain. The kitchen, the ceiling will be removed, jitboard ceiling and the lighting, as well as the restroom. The conference room also will have the jitboard ceiling removed and the lighting removed. The lobby, the jitboard ceiling will remain, and the small alcove, that will be demolished along with that light fixture, the 2x4 fixture. So we'll be providing new ceiling-mounted speakers, as I said before, in the council chambers room. New lighting in the staff room, along with a new jitboard ceiling and HVAC registers, the supply and return. Also, the women's restroom will have, and men's restroom will have the exhaust fans, and new exhaust fans, new lighting, and new jitboard ceiling. The hallway will also have new jitboard ceiling and new lighting. Now, going to the interior elevations, the lobby is at the top, and basically where you see the hatch pattern right there, that is a new jitboard. That's a new jitboard wall where the upper portion is where the plywood was. I'm sorry, not plywood. The wood paneling is being removed. Then a new jitboard down below on the first floor as well. And the rest of the room will be painted, and the front door will have a hold open put on it, so you don't have to put a doorstop or something underneath it to hold it open. The next elevation is a hall, and we'll have new signage in there, as well as new jitboard walls, finished walls. Also, the staff room, you see it looks like... The window will remain. At one time, they wanted to put a door where that window was in the kitchen, but because of budget constraints, they're not able to do that. And so for now, we're just going to leave the window in, and maybe they could put one in the future. And then we have some cabinetry in there as well, base cabinets and with sink and a location for a small compact refrigerator. At one time, they had upper cabinets in that location, but because of budget constraints, again, they were removed. And the plan is to put some blocking in there for maybe a future upper cabinets if we can do that later down the road. So this is the elevations of the men's and women's restrooms. Basically, we have like a 4-foot-6 high wainscot FRP, which is fiberglass reinforced panels. And let's see, linoleum flooring with cove base. And then you see the fixtures there for the plumbing fixtures. And basically it will just be painted above the wainscot, and then we have the FRP. And that was done because of budget constraints as well. We couldn't really afford to do the ceramic tile. We did visit that with the estimate, but it was decided that it was too expensive and it didn't really fit in the budget. So, and that's about it.
And there is an audio-video component to this project, which actually necessitated a lot of the renovations in this room were a result of the audio-video improvements. And here to discuss those is Eric with Jensen.
Hello, good evening. I got a copy of the slides up here for myself as well. I'm going to talk really briefly about the audiovisual improvements that we're including in this project. I love public speaking and I hate it at the same time, so forgive me if I stutter a little bit. So the main goal of this audiovisual project was to modernize the equipment that's in this room and the equipment that you guys use on a weekly or daily basis. Technology has changed so much over the last few years that it's kind of important to keep up with it, otherwise it will go very obsolete very quickly. So we wanted to really improve your guys' use of the technology in here, hide all the technology from your view and the public view, and modernize everything so that we could adhere to today's technology standards while also maintaining the ability to broadcast in standard definition to your cable company as well. So when we looked at the needs for this project, we kind of took all those things into account, and I think we came up with a good project. So first thing that we're going to do is we're going to provide 4 new HD cameras. They're going to be permanently installed on the walls inside the building. I guess I have the option to advance forward here. There we go. They're going to be controlled with a joystick by the broadcast operators, who are normally in the back. There's going to be 4 positions for those guys to be in, here, 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 and here. So this camera here is going to be focused on getting a wide shot, much like we have now. This camera here will get the city council. This is for the city staff, and this is for the folks at the podium. So we'll have a nice front-end view of those guys who are talking. Even though the cameras are HD, the processing equipment that we're going to be putting in will eventually, by the time it gets to the cable company, go back to a square format like we have here, so that we can still maintain the standard definition for the viewers at home, but I'll get into why we're going to keep them high definition here in a few seconds. We're going to replace all the microphones that you guys have with new ones that you can move around, and they will also have red LED halos on them, and they'll also have cough buttons or mute buttons on them there for you, so that you'll know when you have a hot mic in front of you and if you need to cough or have a private conversation or something like that, you could easily turn it off and you'll know that your mic is hot or not hot. Always a good thing to have. Same thing with the podium too. The podium will also have a new microphone with a halo here, so the person who is here doesn't have to walk up and say, is this thing on? It'll be ready to go for them. One of the nice features about the system that we're going to be providing is that it's all the microphones are going to be able to be controlled by either the clerk or the broadcast operators, so that they can manually turn your mics on and off should you forget, or maybe there's a privacy concern or something like that, they can turn you off in case you forgot. So everybody can look out for everybody else, which will be a nice feature.
Turn them on.
We're going to upgrade the operator workstation, so we're going to remove them from the back of the room like they are now. I know the AGP operator likes to be in front of everybody. I do too. But we're going to move them upstairs. Now, one of the project requirements for this was that we could maintain an ADA compliance should we ever have a need for an operator that needs to remain in this room or can't make it up the stairs because there is no elevator. So we found a really nice, elegant solution by a company called Blackmagic, which allows us to literally grab just the monitors and keyboard and move them anywhere in the building, and they can operate the broadcast from anywhere where there's a network connection. So we're going to remove them from the back of the room, but we're going to put an auxiliary wall plate back there so that they can just, if need be, We grab the table, grab the monitors, plug them in down here, and then they're good to go. Really elegant solution. We're going to replace your projector with a brand new, much brighter projector that's high definition. It's also laser-based. It does not require lamps, and it's certified for 20,000 hours of maintenance-free operation, which is nice because the projector will last longer than your technology expiration dates. So even if you use the projector for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you'll still replace the projector before the lamp goes out, which is nice. So at least maintenance costs on that go way down, and your clarity and brightness go way up. So readability for you guys and the general public is going to go through the roof. We're also going to replace your document camera with one that is in modern times. It's also going to be, believe it or not, the camera on top can also be used as an auxiliary camera, and EGP can use it as a fifth camera in the room should the need arise. But folks, when they come up, there'll be a little screen that's on the document camera up at the top here, so they'll be able to see and preview what they're arranging on screen before it goes to air, before they showed up here, so that everybody, you know, can kind of be prepared for their presentations more quickly and more rapidly. We're also at the staff table. We're going to be replacing the computer inputs that are over there and getting rid of the stuff that's on the table. So there'll be modern bring-your-own-device connections for tablets, laptops, those kinds of things. So there'll be digital, like HDMI connections or stuff that you can plug your phone into should somebody want to come in and do that. That seems to be pretty popular these days. We're also going to put inputs here at the podium as well. So somebody could come up to the podium and plug in their tablet or laptop and present from the podium as well. So you're not confined to just doing it from there. You're also going to be able to do it from here. And Michelle was talking briefly about how we're going to get rid of the cords and stuff that are going to be down here. So there'll be permanent video inputs here at the podium, which will be really nice. The other nice thing about it, too, is that the podium will be able to be moved so that this space can remain a multi-purpose space, not just for city council meetings. So if you guys are doing staff trainings or rent it out for extracurricular use, the podium can be moved, and with just some extra cables, you know, anywhere else, this room can be easily reconfigured to suit whatever needs you guys need to do. Here's just a quick slide on what the broadcast system is going to look like. It's pretty much PC-based, so it can be run from a laptop, and in fact, it can be run from multiple laptops by multiple operators. So a single operator could operate the system, but for a nice fluid motion, we recommend having an audio operator and a video operator at the same time so they're not having to multitask too much. But they do operate from laptops. They connect to the system through the network, and they can do it from anywhere in the building as long as there's a network connection. Part of the project is also to include a assisted listening system inside the chambers. And so the system that we chose is a magnetic induction loop system that people would use for T-coil hearing aids. So what we're going to do is pull up the carpet around the inside the chambers and lay down flat copper wiring that will lay under the carpet in kind of a figure eight configuration. And for people with hearing disabilities, and have a T-coil equipped hearing aid, they just flip the switch on the back of their hearing aid. In some cases, it's automatic. And they'll be able to hear clear audio from inside the room. And it's a kind of amazing technology. The second you walk out of the room, it fades away before you even leave the building. So it's really only kind of contained in this room, and it's for this purposes. You'll also be provided with a quantity of what we call belt packs and neck loops, so that somebody could put it around their neck and listen through an earphone for people who do not have a T-coil equipped hearing aid. But we know from past experience that people prefer to be discreet about their hearing impairment and most of the time won't even ask. So having the induction loop in the floor is really nice for those people who may be too timid to ask for a belt pack. So that's going to be a nice feature. We're going to be putting in new speakers into the lobby and the outside for overflow area. So when you guys have those really big meetings for like water rate increases and those kinds of things, people will be able to overflow outside and still be able to hear what's going on the inside. And they'll be able to be turned on and turned off from inside the room by either the clerk or the AGP operator. We're going to be putting a new equipment rack upstairs where the operator console is going to be located. Right now, I don't know if any of you guys have been upstairs, but there is an equipment rack up there that's a little unsightly. That's going to get removed and replaced. And the equipment rack will all be completely self-contained with the broadcasting equipment, including monitors that are built into the rack, so that anybody could just glance at the rack and know whether or not we are online and live with the folks at home, or if something has gone wrong. So it'll be very easy to know what the state of the channel is, as well as the City Council meeting during live broadcast, just by glancing at the rack. Some other features that we're going to include, it's high-definition recording capable. I said I was going to kind of come back to why we were going to keep the cameras in high-def, even though you have a standard definition channel. So for archival purposes, we're going to be keeping a separate HD recording of your meetings, of any meetings that happen in here. And those recordings will be able to be activated from the clerk position at any time. So if you're doing like a staff training or something like that, you'll be able to initiate a recording, and the cameras will automatically go to preset locations, so that you could conduct a staff training without any training on the audiovisual in the room and still have a recording for later purposes. And it's high def, so it's in modern times. There's going to be a control and automation system that's going to be touchscreen operated. There's going to be a small touchscreen for the clerk, and then a small touchscreen for the broadcast operators, AGP in the back. And from those touchscreens, they'll be able to adjust the audio levels in the room. They'll be able to start and stop recordings. And the clerk and the operators will have slightly different operation of how all that stuff goes. But the intent is so that the clerk could, for meetings that do not have an operator, could operate the room independently. So she'll be able to run the room, whereas the AGP in the back would be operating the broadcast, and they wouldn't conflict with each other. Which is really nice, and that way you don't have the dueling light switches kind of thing where somebody's pushing the mute and the other person's pushing the mute and suddenly nobody can talk. So that'll be a nice feature as well. The system is going to be upgradable to three main displays in the future should the event arise. We wanted to make sure there was future expansion for basically adding additional displays so that we can avoid the need for someone to talk away from you guys while they're presenting. We want to make sure that in the future that we could put a display here to the left side or to the back. That way we can address the council when we are making our presentations. And then as part of our design contract, we also included a lighting design for in here. And should the budget allow, either now or in the future, we want to make sure that we can make the city staff and the city council look as well as they can on camera. So it's a lighting package for dimmable LED fixtures that are designed for broadcast television. The light is color balanced to be specific to make you look warm and healthy and happy while you're on TV, rather than the glow of fluorescent lighting.
Less heavy? Does it take that 10 pounds off?
Exactly, yes, yes. There's actually, there'll be a button for that. And that pretty much concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that describes the project that we had bid. And as a result of the a variety of circumstances, the bids came in higher. We're making a different recommendation tonight. But I did want to kind of go back to the beginning and describe really the genesis for this project and why it is that we're bringing it forward. There's really two reasons. One is to provide handicap accessible restrooms, and really to provide additional restrooms so that we had kind of higher quantity for the number of residents, a number of people who come to our meetings. So that was one driving force. And the other was the audio video enhancements, and which Eric described. We actually have PEG funds. They were funds that were generated through our charter franchise that we no longer get. But those funds are dedicated specifically to audio, video production, and dissemination requirements. So we can't use them for anything else. And so we do have some deficiencies in terms of our capabilities, as he described. Some of the technology that we use now is archaic. There is a better way to present. You know, our presentations are woefully inadequate. It's difficult to see them from any part of the room. That's a function that we really should improve. And so we focused on some of those improvements. And so those funds in the amount of $160,000 could only be used for audio video. We did combine the two projects in concept because for a few reasons. One is we wanted one contractor to come in and be here and do all the work at one time to minimize the amount of downtime for the room. If we had a subcontractor do just the restroom, that would take a certain period of time. We wouldn't want two contractors in working on the, next to them each other. So we would have to do another project afterwards, and it would extend the amount of time. So we combined them. And also, some of the work that we're proposing to do for the audio-video requires some construction work. We'll be breaking into walls to run conduit, put in data ports and other functionality. So it requires a general contractor. So it wasn't as simple as just saying we're going to hire an audio video guy to come in and bring some equipment in. It actually was embedded into the building. So that was our thought. Due to some conditions kind of beyond our control, and primarily the hot market right now for construction, And Greg Ravatt, principal and owner of Ravatt Albrecht, knows much better than I and could probably answer some more questions. The market right now is bringing in either no bids, the contractors are just too busy, or they're not doing small projects like this. This is a relatively small project, and there are very kind of few vertical construction contractors doing this kind of work. Particularly when you have a renovation, it's not the most attractive type of project. So due to those circumstances, we only received one bid, and we believe that bid is higher than it should be. And so what we're recommending tonight is that the council reject the bid, the single bid, and that we go back and redesign the project and then come forward actually with two separate projects, a smaller project to redo the restrooms and then a separate AV project that would fit within the budget that the council has previously provided. If the council chooses, there are a couple options. One option would be to award the construction and to provide the additional funding for the work that's been described bid. The contractor that was successful on the in submitting a bid is a quality contractor. They're local, and we're comfortable with their reputation and their quality work. And the subcontractor for the AV work is also a reputable firm that we feel comfortable with their quality work. So that's an option tonight for the council actually to proceed with the project, go ahead and award the project tonight, allocate additional funds from the general fund balance. We do have a healthy general fund balance that could cover this cost. We could move forward tonight. We do have it laid out for us to relocate our meetings in other buildings. Those meetings are scheduled. Those facilities are scheduled for us, so you, if you chose tonight, you could take that option as well. And there are a couple other alternatives in there that council, should you wish to use an alternative course tonight in opposition to just rejecting the bids, you could do so. With that, be happy to answer any questions or have the consultants answer any questions that you might have.
Questions for staff? Councilmember Gatti?
I guess my first question is, when you say you come back with an alternative design, are you? Could you just sort of elaborate on what the alternative design might be?
Certainly. One would be to value engineer, really look at some of the construction methods and design. We actually like the format of the design. We don't think that there are many other alternatives. One example of value engineering is that we could reduce the number of fixtures, for instance, in the men's restroom. When you build restrooms, it's often common to put the plumbing in one wall. In this design, we have plumbing for the restrooms in different walls because of the configuration, because of the number of fixtures. If we reduce the number of fixtures, we could put them in a common wall, and that would save some costs because you're not when you run the plumbing lines, you're actually going to have to socket into the concrete and do some demo, run plumbing, put up a wall. There's just much more cost. So that's the kind of value engineering we'd be looking at to reduce costs. So we could design a project that will come in under bid. Also, we believe that if we gave it a little more time and did some outreach and focused the project in two different projects, we could potentially target more contractors to bid and be successful securing more bids in the next round. So hopefully that answers your question.
So primarily through value engineering and do the same design and all, but the by things like reducing the fixtures. I know we talked about reducing the number of the outlets, maybe that kind of thing.
Correct.
The other question I have is actually just related to design. At times, staff now is upstairs as kind of a workspace while they're waiting.
Correct.
Is that still going to be doable with video up there?
I don't see why it wouldn't. There would be a...
Excuse me. That would be what this room would be for, right?
So I think your question really centers around if we didn't...
You would put staff in the conference room?
So if... Yes, the thought would be that the staff would go in the conference room. One of the functionalities that we liked about the design, kind of punching a hole through the door here, is that one, that would be direct access for you when you went to a closed session, just walk directly through into that door. And also the staff would be able to come right out of that door and take a seat when they were needed. We often have delays where you have a question. One of the staff members who is in the bullpen, as we refer to it, and you call into the bullpen, it takes a while for that person to come and respond. This would improve our response time and functionality of the building. So, yes, it would be our intent to use that room as the kind of staff area during council meetings, as well as a closed session room.
All right. I think those are my questions. Thank you.
Can you, without being too specific, can you say how is the bid way out of line in terms of the budget, or is it just
76,000?
Yeah, based on the funding and what would be required, I believe
it was 100. I'm sorry. It would require the to move forward with the base bid and added alternate number one, which I believe was the carpet. It would require an appropriation of another $176,000 of general fund reserves.
About $586,000 total.
Okay, thanks for that, Jeff. In terms of the room upstairs, that's never seemed to be a very comfortable room to me. When you have audiovisual people up there and everything, is it a comfortable room for people to be in? Because last time I remember, it was noisy and it was hot. And I'm just wondering, while we're working on the building, should there be any improvements to that room? We haven't talked about that at all, but...
That was not part of the design, and it is not the most comfortable room. It does have an air conditioner. We just recently put in some better quality windows up there. There will be some improvements. There's a kind of partition wall up there that will come down. There will be some improvements as part of this project, but we didn't focus on redesigning the entire room and doing improvements up there. Wasn't part of the scope.
And then on the audio, maybe this is a question for you. Is there going to be feedback? Are we going to hear an echo if there's really good speakers in, other parts of the building?
I think the goal of upgrading the audio system in here, it will be a permanent system. What's included in the project is called an audio DSP. It's a hardware component that has features built into it so that we can equalize the microphones and the speakers separately, and also include what are called compressors and limiters, So you actually improve the way the microphones are used. They will perform like auto-leveling functions and stuff like that, so that you can be very close to the microphone or further away from the microphone, and you would still have very similar audio levels. It also remove all the little popping and hissings that come out of people who have too much bass in their voice and or like to swallow the microphones. So it will actually improve the overall experience in the room in general.
Okay. And then I think you guys touched on this at the beginning of the presentation, but just there's a lot of cabling around here. It's hard for me to walk around, plus it looks kind of hokey. We're not going to have all this cabling that's just going to be laying around, right?
You'll have none of it. It's all either getting buried into the ceiling or into the walls.
Yeah, and that is one of the challenges with this project was, and one of the cost increases is that we looked at making some upgrades in this building as well that weren't really anticipated. We did talk about the audio-video portion originally, but as we got further into it, we looked at putting additional data outlets in the walls. We looked at putting this conduit underground. It just seemed to make sense that if we're going to do this, let's do it right and do it the first time, instead of ending up with a room that kind of still looks like this after the fact. So there was a little mission creep in the design of the project. We did our best to stay focused on that, but kind of the two components, the AV project kind of helped or caused some increase in the construction part of the project because we're trying to make improvements to this room as well.
Okay. So I'm assuming even with value engineering, we're probably looking at a higher cost. I mean, that's probably the harsh reality of it, right?
We could design a project to fit the budget, and that would reduce the scope of that restroom project based on these bids. I'd ask the architects to weigh in on that question a little. They're more in tune to the bidding circumstances now than I am.
Yeah, I would just say, I apologize, Mr. Mayor, I'm kind of delving into comments, but when you come back, if I'm not going to be all shocked if you have to come back with a higher budget than we anticipated, just given current economic situation in Rio Grande. So I think what you guys have done is amazing in terms of changes, and I don't think it's audacious. I don't think it's asking too much. So I guess my point of my comment is don't be afraid to come back with a higher budget if need be, because I think the council would look at that seriously. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. So with the revisions that are going to be coming back and returning, it will still be a combined project. So there's no discussion about separating and doing the AV portion, those upgrades, the sound, the displays, without also incorporating the upgrades to the rest of the building. You're still on the line where it's better because of the construction needs for the cabling to do these as a combined project.
We haven't had an opportunity as a team to have that discussion yet. There will be some work that's part of the AV project that will require a general contractor. If we separated the two projects, there would still be some work necessary by a general contractor as opposed to just somebody who does audio-video installations.
And then that could jack up that portion of that piece.
Correct.
Okay.
So,
well, I was just going to add a little bit of information on that. And Jeff didn't really mention the status of this building. This building is, I don't even know that we had, what do you call them, the plans, the as-built plans?
We do not have as-built plans for this building. This was originally a fire station. built, I believe, back in the 40s.
Something like that.
40s or 50s. And so, obviously, there's in the wall, there isn't the conduit and cabling and modern amenities. And so, we're renovating an older building.
So I think we were taking the opportunity, like currently right now, we have one network drop in this entire building. So, you know, as Eric was mentioning about technology advances, we all know we've been talking about technology advances, and, you know, this building just doesn't have that. So it was just the opportunity to include that portion of it. I mean, we need it for the equipment, but it would also... you know, adding the extra network drops, which is probably not a real high cost factor when you have the walls open anyway, would just be, would increase the availability of network connectivity in this facility, which, you know, I think is going to be a city facility for a long time to come. And, you know, I've been here 17 years. We haven't done any substantial, especially with audio and sound system upgrades, in this building. So it was just kind of an overview of the opportunity to make this facility up to current technology standards.
Sure. Thank you for that.
Certainly, and there that is an option for the council tonight, is to award the project and allocate the additional funds. $170,000 for a building is kind of a paltry amount for some of the buildings that we've spent money on over the last few years. And we have not invested in this building for some time. I was hesitant to bring that recommendation forward tonight because of our circumstances. However, that is an option for the council to just go ahead and move forward and allocate those funds. And then we can begin construction on schedule.
Okay. So I think in the staff report there was also information related to having the architect rework, do part of the value engineering, or kind of just taking a look at the plans and seeing where we could maybe get a little more cost savings. And so would that also then add to the cost of the project? For those additional services provided by the architect, who's done a fantastic job so far.
Yeah, we did get a cost estimate. We would have to get a cost estimate from the AV folks as well, from Jensen. It was approximately $5,000 to do the value engineering and the repackaging. Okay. And so I would anticipate some cost from Jensen as well to help repackage.
That's the term. Okay.
I would add that on the AV portion of that, I think that there's an ability to look at that again as far as the type of equipment, whether there's other models, things like that. But having said that, and knowing just the status of the system and how long it's been in place here, and you know when we're going to be able to upgrade it again, I would. Look to, you know, trying to install state-of-the-art equipment to the best that we can, knowing that it probably will be in place for a lot of years, you know.
I would agree, Ms. Wetmore, with that need for sure. Let's see. So with this repackaging, what kind of delays or what kind of setbacks related to timing? If we were going to move forward in September, then what kind of setbacks do you think that would be timing-wise for us to get it moving forward, back on track?
I would anticipate a four-month delay. We would be looking at starting this work after the first of the year. We would want to wait until election season was over and the use of these buildings and look at the January, February, March, April window.
Okay. Then this might be a question for Mr. Kapkoff. I thought I heard that we weren't going to, because of budget constraints, the lighting here was not, the lighting here wasn't going to be updated. And so with this, what do they call it, fluorescent lighting, then if we do this fabulous HD state-of-the-art system, then how are these lights going to impact our visual presentations from the HD TV screens and things like that? Because this screen is the thing that is the most disturbing to me related to presentations. So if we're going to be going for it, then I want to make sure the lighting isn't going to, you know, negate the gains and the expense for improvement.
With upgrading to high definition video within the room, you kind of separate the audiovisual for presentations in the space and then the audiovisual for conducting a broadcast to television. High definition has more color definition and wider dynamic range, which means that there's more differences between color hues and between lights and darks and those kinds of things. So definitely the fluorescent lighting doesn't help. But the one thing to keep in mind is that our feed to the customers at home is still standard definition. Mm-hmm. So even though we have a high definition recording that we are conducting, AGP is still conducting a standard definition recording, and the folks at home are seeing standard definition. And all the improvements that happen here that you guys get to keep and enjoy in this room, for the folks at home, they still get a similar experience than what they had before. But it'll just be a little bit more ergonomic for everybody here in this room.
Yeah. And then with that, then I've heard over time that people that are watching at home, there's audio issues, there's sound issues. So this new system that's being proposed will not change that based on still having the standard definition television. Audio may still, no offense, AGP, do a great job. But for the audio, I think, you know, it has to do with, you know, people leaning in like I'm doing now and then leaning out. I think it fades when people are on TV. So will the new systems, at least for the mics, then help with improvement for the folks watching at home?
It will significantly improve the experience at home as well as in this room.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. That's all I have for questions. Thank you. Thank you.
I guess my only question is so that the project was bid as one package bid with both the AV and the construction part of it?
And then correct. There is a general contractor. The general contractor has a subcontractor, and that subcontractor is the audio-visual purchaser and installer. Mm-hmm.
So without changing the the specs, I guess, do we think that separately bidding those two portions might result in a significant savings?
The bid for the AV portion, we actually had them separate out, and this one of the challenges is that it was difficult to separate all the AV costs because some of them were embedded in the construction portion of the project. It came in at $159,000, the AV portion. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that the contractor, the subcontractor, or the general contractor put a percentage markup on that, and so there's some markup. So you may see a savings of whatever that markup was. Usually it's 10 to 15%. So there's maybe some benefit there of separating that out. It all depends on the bidding climate when we go out to bid. So,
right. Okay, that's my only question. Is there public comment on this item?
Leanne Akins, Arroyo Grande. I don't have a question. I only have a comment, and I think it just goes back to we don't have a balanced budget. And that concerns me, and that's why I'm running for city council. I think that we need to work towards balancing our budget. Doesn't mean that this project doesn't have merit, and it doesn't mean that we don't need to invest in our infrastructure, but I think I'm not the only one in the community who's concerned about not having a balanced budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, we'll come back to council for comment and decision. Councilmember Guthrie.
I can't
night.
Yeah.
I guess my first thing, I mean, you know, I've been here a long time, and this has been a project that frankly should have been done way back when I started, because this is certainly a public space, and for a public space not to have ADA compliance, I'm frankly stunned that we haven't gotten it done so far. But I know it's because it's always part of a much bigger project. My inclination here would be that we go ahead and go forward and go ahead and take that. I'm a little bit hesitant, not because of the budget, because I'll get to that in a minute, but because, you know, maybe there is, you know, a 10%, you know, savings or something out there. But my inclination here is we put this all together. It would be great to have this new room in January and have this ready to go, because I have a feeling that the next 6 months and a year are actually going to be very busy meeting-wise for you guys, because there's a lot of new direction. So that my inclination here would be, let's go ahead and do the bid, and let's look at our capital projects in, you know, in the first half of next year, and see if there's not something, a couple $100,000 or something, that we can just push into the next year. I guarantee you that there'll be something that will not make it on time and is going to be in the next year anyway. You could almost roll the dice and just do that, and you would still be in balance at the end of the year. But it would be, for the public's perception standpoint, that if we could find that item and just move it into the next year, I just can't believe there isn't something there that we could do that with. And if things turn out to be brighter than we thought, which is likely, frankly, given that some expenses are going to be down and some income is going to be up, that we might just find the money to do that project anyway. But that's my inclination. I think this is one of those things that we have to move forward with. I think, frankly, I think we knew at the time that $400,000 was probably not enough. So, like I said, my inclination is to move forward and just get this done. So.
Councilmember Brown.
I agree with Councilman Guthrie, actually. I appreciate value engineering. I know we did that with the police station, I think, and we did, you know, we've done it before, and it saves some money. But if it's not going to save a substantial sum, I think we're spending a lot of staff time and consultants' time and all that to save us a minimal amount of money. And I'd rather see this project move forward. This building has always struck me as it was adapted for a use that it was never intended for, and it just shows every time you walk in the building. So it really needs to be upgraded to be more publicly friendly. I think the bathroom situation is horrendous, not just the ADA portion, but just the we take a 10-minute break and people are standing in line to go to the bathroom. That's just crazy. So I'm willing to move forward, I think. Normally I'm penny-pinching and all that, but I don't get the sense from your presentation, Jeff, that if we value engineer this, we're going to save substantial sums of money. We may show that we're being, you know, really vigilant with people's dollars in one sense, but on the other hand, if we're spending a lot of staff time and extra consultant time, I'm not sure the savings in the end is going to be worth it. So, because you guys have a lot on your plate, other things to do as well. So, I'm more than ready to move forward, actually.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. So in my previous discussions, when we were actually reviewing all of this, I believe it was for the 2015 budget, this $410,000 is coming out of our sales tax fund, correct? Regardless of what fund, but it's a
$410,000 of that, $160,000 is coming out of PEG funds. So the balance, whatever that difference would be, comes out of the sales tax dollars. That's correct.
So there's a dedicated funding source for these types of infrastructures through Measure 06, that sales tax fund.
Correct. It can be used for city facilities, and the council makes determinations every budget cycle on where to allocate the funds that come in for that particular year.
The justification and the nexus related to that parameter, related to that measure.
Correct.
Okay. So when we were discussing this previously, I really supported more of the sound system, the video displays, the upgrades. The cost of the $400,000, I understand the importance of the ADA, absolutely important. I understand the inconvenience of the bathroom facilities that we have during council meetings. But we do have several meetings that rotate through here, the sanitation district, traffic planning, and all of that. But I kind of go back to, I guess really, it is still this upgrade to the chamber, with the exception of the audio visual video needs. It seems more of a want to me than a need. We've been bumping along with an adequate, maybe not a perfect, setup for council meetings, etc. But I kind of go back to it being a want more than a need. We're already looking at budget shortfalls. We know that there's a big cliff coming up. We're trying to do long-term economic sustainability to try to manage our economic sustainability. So then we have this presentation where one bid comes in, and there's reasons for that, but one bid comes in, and it's $176,000 more. And I get that there's a big variance when we do these bids. This happens, you know, it's through no fault of anybody's. But because it was only one bid, then how do we know that if we had other bids coming in, that they weren't all going to be about maybe 140 to 175 over, then we would have a better idea of how, I'm not going to say honest, but you know, the realisticness of this $176,000 really over what's expected. So I kind of go back to, I would support rejecting the bid, but more importantly, I would support going forward with at least getting the audio visual done, and then separating and you know, pulling the remodels, you know, for some later time. That might be unrealistic, but it seems like if I look at the priority, that seems more of the priority than the upgrades to the rest of the building. Also, I'm concerned about, is there another critical need for a project? I appreciate Mr. Guthrie's comments about, well, maybe we can look at our other capital funds and carve off the 176 or the 200 to make this work now, but I'm not willing to do that because I know there may be more critical needs for projects in the future that we, you know, might wish we had that money back. So, long story short, I think I am going to would rather support the staff recommendations on this and just put the brakes on this until we have a little bit better understanding of the actual costs. I want to go forward with it being, if we're going to do it, we need to do it then as far as the state-of-the-art. Do the bathrooms the way we feel are necessary and not cut corners there. You know, not cut the corners and find a way to realistically pay for it. Then to cut back, then why do the remodel at all? So I would want to reject the bids and delay it.
Okay. We do have money, as I understand it, for the AV upgrades. The AV upgrades are basically dependent on the building modifications. So it's not a, you can't just, you know, upgrade the AV and then not do the building modifications to support that AV modification. With respect to the ADA compliance, we must be ADA compliant. With respect to the restrooms, I think after our last break, they're just now serving number 56. And so the restroom situation in this building is hideous. It's not conducive to public use. It's not conducive to having training classes here or anything like that that the city routinely uses this building for, or would if it had better facilities. We bring not only the scheduled city meetings, such as the council, the planning commission, and others, but there are multi-jurisdictional meetings that happen in the building as well, sanitation district being one, meetings related to Northern Cities Management Area, those sorts of things. So this building is really limited in its ability to support those city functions. You who are watching this on TV, which are a significant member of our population, understand the limitations of this building as well. So I would, in terms of the staff recommendation, we've received the presentation, reject all bids and make modifications to the design. I think the design is pretty lean in terms of where we are already, and if that's the only bid, I tend to agree with Mr. Guthrie that this should have been done quite some time ago. Let's have something that we can use, not have to rent off-site facilities, and be compliant with ADA and other requirements. So I would support going forward with it.
Can I say one more thing? I forgot to thank Michelle Stokes and her partner and Eric Kapikoff for coming in and running through their presentations. It was really helpful to actually be able to see it before we discussed, how moving forward. So thank you for that. Thank you for your time.
Yes, we thank you. So
I'll move that we direct staff to accept the bid, move forward with the construction of the improvements to the building, and return with a menu of choices of possible capital projects in the sales tax fund that we could either delay or modify.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we actually approve the bid and come back with recommendations.
We actually have some projects. Recommended language because you are awarding a contract, so we would need to specifically use the award language, and so the
number three
the city
in
attorney category. Has some recommended language. So sorry about that.
Well, I withdraw my motion. I'm a delay.
I would recommend that if you so choose that you would award a contract for the City Council Chambers Access Improvement and Audio, Video, and Sound System Project to Quincon, Inc.
Correct.
In the amount of
$586,871.
Actually, the base bid of $396,544, and then the recommendation was to have the bid alternate of bid additive number one, which would be the new carpet. When we pull the carpet back, you would want to, instead of just laying down this, you would want to replace the carpet. And then appropriate $176,871 from the general fund. So it essentially would be your at a bid alternate or your alternate number three in your package.
So do you have a number?
Yes. The contract amount you would be awarding would be $396,544. The ad alternate would be $16,759. I'm sorry.
For the carpet?
Yes.
Confusing when we started.
And just
I'm on page 4 of the staff report.
There's attachment number 1 that lays out the actual bid, which gives the base bid of the 396, and then it also includes the alternate, which gives you the 16,759. If you're looking for...
I see. So just those two,
yeah.
Rather than...
Right.
Okay.
That was this an option. The other items in that package are for the... Operator console is item number 2. It's the AVPA system, and I'd have to have Eric answer that question. I don't know what that is. Changer alternate displays, that's $21,000. So we're not, and then the lighting is $29,000, which is alternate number five. Those really should have been, we're just recommending number one to move forward tonight.
But that doesn't add up to the total amount, that the 586. So you're actually only having us approve about 106, just barely over 110,000, 396 plus 16.
At the beginning of the impacts in the staff report, actually, that includes, it would be, if you look at page one.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do my bit from.
Yeah, okay. So the additional is 20, it includes the construction contingency, so contingency amounts, inspection, so we would ask that the council award base bid $396,544 and alternate number one $16,759 for a total of $413,000 plus appropriate $176,871 from the general fund reserves to cover those other costs, the contingencies and inspection costs. So,
is that 176 in addition to the numbers you just gave him?
Now the 176 is the appropriation for additional funds to cover.
It's just a transfer.
Correct. It's just a transfer.
Let me just go through one time for just to help me. So we have the construction bid of 396 plus additional one. I'm now reading from page one. For 413, then we're also approving the construction contingency, the construction management inspection for 57,865. But by the way, is that in house? Is that?
No, that's for a contracted project inspector. Our building inspectors do UBC inspection. They come in and we'll look at the, you know, make sure that the electrical's put in correctly. They don't manage a contractor, so they wouldn't make sure that all of the deliverables are done on time, and they don't do the other project management that typically is done by an inspector and construction management firm.
Well, my iPad just went dead, so it's good. So I'm trying to find a short way to get here. So I'll move that we award the construction bid for the base bid plus alternate one to the construction company.
Quincon.
And include with that the contingency, the inspection fees as outlined in the staff report for a total of $586,000 that we appropriate from the reserves $176,000 difference in cost, and that we direct staff to come back with a menu of items where we may be able to make up those costs.
And then I would just clarify, the total is $586,871, and it would also be directing the city clerk to file a notice of exemption.
Include that in my motion.
It's right there. If you want to borrow my, go ahead. I think you did it.
Oh, I think I'm done. Yeah. So you can second it.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
It's been moved and seconded that we proposed as moved with help of the staff, which we appreciate. Can we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Indeed.
Mayor Pro Tem Harmon?
No.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes, measure passes 3-1 with one absent. That concludes the new business. We move on to council communications. Two brief items. First of all, usually we have the meetings attended There is one very significant change with the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District in that the board voted to end the litigation against the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and we are moving forward with that. So that is an announcement that's been worked on for a long time and will ultimately, I believe, save the residents of the area considerably, especially in legal and process fees going forward. For the normal council communications, I would request that we bring to the next council meeting the discussion to have a moratorium certainly on any annexations to the city, and possibly considering a building moratorium going forward in light of our water situation.
I would second that and go along with that.
So I think our rule is that we have two members that wish to have that discussion.
May I ask for clarification for the record? You said discussion on building moratorium just for annexations or overall?
A moratorium on annexations of any additional territory into the city, and then consideration of at least a discussion of building moratoriums going forward.
And I also, I don't know if you're done yet, but I also have a comment if you're done.
Yes.
I just want to, it occurs to me that I've gotten a lot of letters from people regarding the camp, and so because this is televised, I want to use this time to ask the public that if you believe strongly on this item one way or the other, that you write the city so that the city can forward those letters to the Methodist organization, because I believe the Methodist organization understands the value of their legacy in this community, and I think they would understand it even better if they got written responses. The value of the pen and the written word is very important, and if you believe strongly enough in any item, I think it's important that you put it in writing and let the city know. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the water rate increase. It's frustrating to me that the bar is set so high for public protest that we have to get 3,000 letters. That's just not, I understand the legality of it, but it's just not, it's never going to be achieved. So, but that being said, I just want to say, again, there's another example of where writing a letter and letting your feelings be known is a very important function. And I know everybody's just trying to make ends meet and survive and raise their families and, you know, live life. But if you strongly feel passionately about items like that, it's really important that you put it in writing so that we as a council see that and we're just not flying in the wind. So I appreciate the time. Thank you.
I just had one, and I know there was a lot of very good press, but since we just had a presentation at our last council meeting regarding the Relay for Life that was in Aurora Grande this past weekend, tremendous results for the 28 teams that participated. I think it was like $83,000 that was raised for, as we all know, a very worthy cause. And I just wanted to commend everybody, including, I can't remember the young man's name, Brian, I think it was, who came and spoke to encourage everybody to participate. And it looks like he was effective, nothing like the power of chocolate. But everybody seemed to come out and support that event. And I think it's another really great example of how Aurora Grande comes together and supports everyone. So I just wanted to commend those folks that did that for 48 hours or however long they had to do it. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. We have no closed session item this evening. Is there any closing public comment?
You'll get tired of hearing from me before you adjourn tonight. So I have a lot of time on my hands sometimes on the weekends, and I read a lot. And I was reading that there was a water summit
held at the White House this last, well, I think it was in at the end of June or the very beginning of July. And there were like 50 to 75 different initiatives that came out of that, a lot of different partnerships, really all over the nation. I think what intrigued me about it is there were links to some other articles, so I started to dig a little deeper. And according to the U.S. Drought Monitor, as of July 2016, 83% of the state of California is currently in a drought state. So this brings me to the majority of my comment. I think that we need to stop talking about making plans about water and actually start doing something about it. And so I would encourage that the council moving forward read the information that I'll be forwarding to you in the next few days, specifically regarding 9 experts on California water policy and management, which was one of the articles that came out of my digging a little bit. I think my final comments would focus on words like managed aquifer recharge, conjunctive use. So these are new terms that I was learning about as I was reading. But as I view some of the minutes from prior council meetings, and not just over the last couple of years, meetings that go back even farther, I don't see those words in there. And I think we need to start thinking outside of the box and stop paying lip service and actually start taking steps to make sure that we have a secure water supply. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay, hearing none, that's the end of the evening's business. We have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.